You're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast with Drifticon producer Mitch Alec and artist extraordinaire Jerry Ordway. Each time the guys get together, they talk about movies, TV, comic books, and more, eating pizza and a lot of noise in the background. But hey, you know what you're getting into when you turn this thing on. So sit back, relax, and listen to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Today, every time I hear this song, all I can...
Today's March 14th?
Yeah, I know, but every time I hear this song, all I think is Chris Farley.
What song?
Everybody's working the week. Oh, that's right, because we don't want to get copyright. You remember him and Patrick Swayze? They were supposed to be Chip and Dale dancers?
Yeah.
And he was doing the whole bit?
Yeah, yeah.
And like, we can't hire you. He was like, okay. But that's before they had body shaming. It was just fucking funny. I'm sorry. Chris Farley was nuts.
Are you recording?
Yes. Chris Farley was nuts back in the day. He was always falling. Oh, no, remember when he Matt Foley?
Remember on Letterman when came down to...
He run it down out of breath, sweating. Yeah, he just would fall down.
Flips, and he was rubbing people on audiences.
When you're high as a kite, Jerry, you don't feel anything. No, I like
that's
Chris Farley.
That's how you went to Terrific.
That's how I run Terrific. High as a kite. You know what's funny?
People always surprise me when you do that
Farley,
triple flip.
I do like John Belushi. Chris Farley's brother, Peter, lives here in Fairfield. Did you know this? Or Kevin.
Well, didn't he grow up in the Fairfield?
Yeah. But he lives around here. He looks like his brother, but he's not as big. And by big, I mean he's only about 2 feet high. There we go.
So we had an anniversary, I think 30th anniversary of John Candy's death.
They did. I saw that. It was March 4th.
I missed that guy. He was so great.
John Candy was great.
Yeah.
And then on March 5th was the 42nd anniversary of John Belushi's death. So if you're named John and it's early March and you're fat or overweight, you better watch out. John Goodman, they're looking for you, buddy. Yeah, no, Candy was fantastic. 42 years old, heart attack.
Really in a short time. I mean, he did a lot of funny movies.
He did a lot of
movies. The SCTV stuff was great.
Yeah. I saw him filming Only the Lonely in Chicago.
Yeah.
I was there for a convention, and he was down there with Ali Sheedy.
Yeah.
And they were filming right there near Wrigley Field. And his trailer was there. And it's so funny. One of the production assistants, I go, oh, is Mr. Candy here? Oh, yeah, he's a big man. And the guy telling me this had to be like
a
huge guy. And when John came out of his trailer, the whole trailer just moved. You could see him walking, like, here he comes. And it's like a cartoon. It's like Bluto from Popeye. And when he stepped down the step, the whole thing was rocking.
Right.
Yeah, but he finished off 2 bottles of tequila by himself like it was water. Because he was just like, hey, guys! And he drank it down. I was like,
on the SCTV DVDs that I got,
Johnny LaRue.
They had like a little thing where it was really funny. They were talking about how he was, like, just very friendly.
Yeah,
he was
very sweet guy. Nice guy. Very sweet,
But they said that there was this executive meeting when they were on NBC.
Yeah.
They did the 90-minute thing.
Yeah.
They're having, like, a meeting, and John had been in a skit where he played, a big baby. So he had the big baby bonnet
and a diaper on. Yeah,
he comes into the meeting, and they said, like, they were just laughing because he'd be, like, very serious, nodding his head, and the bonnet's flopping around and stuff.
Yeah.
He just like, okay.
Do you know the scene?
I know I have no shirt on and I'm wearing a diaper.
The scene in Splash where he's playing racquetball.
Oh, yeah.
He's hungover. He literally got in at like 4 or 5 in the morning because he was partying a bit. And they said, we got a 6 o'clock call. He's not overacting. He is so out of shape and so hungover in that scene. But that's a true story.
But
he was a very sweet guy. I remember I wrote him a fan letter. It had to be like, when he was on SCTV. Yeah, it was 83, because he was my favorite. Never got a response back. 3 years later, I get a Christmas card in the mail from Toronto and an autographed picture and a letter, and it says, Dear Mitch, I'm so sorry it's taking me so long. I've been so busy with... He goes, oh, yada, yada, who am I lying to? I'm lazy. I just didn't get to your letter, but I feel horrible about it, but... Here's this picture of me. I hope you like it. And here's a Christmas card from me and my family.
Yeah.
I was like, what? And he goes, take care. And I didn't think it was really his family.
Yeah.
So I saw the address, and I wrote him a Christmas card back.
Right.
And then I got another response back, and it said, what, you didn't think this was my real address? And he goes, Merry Christmas, Sean Candy. I was like, oh, my God. That was weird. So I was 80s. And you know what's so funny? He died, and it was the same day Kirk Carbone. Cobain attempted suicide in Italy, and then a month later he'd be successful when he put a shotgun to his head, but he tried to overdose a month, the same day as Candy. And I remember listening to the news, I'm like, wait, we lose John Candy, but they save Kurt Cobain, and then a month later Kurt Cobain takes himself out. But the reason why I mentioned that is because I was listening to Rob Morrow from Northern Exposure, who I did not know was a good singer. He has record albums. Did you know that?
No.
You can go download. He's got a good voice, kind of like a Southside Johnny type of thing. And he has Christmas albums with Lisa Lowe.
Oh, yeah.
Remember her?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, my name is Luca. Yeah, I live on the second floor. But go Google on your Apple iTunes, Rob Morrow. He's got record albums out. But he talks about when he hosted Saturday Night Live, he was that big in the early 90s. He was on Northern Exposure. Yeah, yeah. And then he had that movie with Game Show.
He had a couple of attempts. Yeah,
with Robert Redford. That was his big
movie.
And that's what made him leave Northern Exposure. Because he's got to, but he says he came in to go see Kurt Cobain, and he went into the dressing room, and he was passed out on the floor, and all his band members were just sitting around like nothing's, and they were stepping over him.
Right.
And they're like, oh, yeah, hey, what's up? He's like, what was his wife's name? She had a baby.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. Courtney Love.
Courtney Love. She was there with her baby, and she's just sitting there nursing the baby. And there's Kurt Cobain literally passed out on the floor, but no one's doing anything about it. And then a month later, he kills himself. It's like, did you try?
People get tired of trying to help people.
I guess.
Those guys live with it. I mean, it's like,
if
you had a family member who drank, you can't stop someone.
I know, but I'm like, to hear it in retrospect, knowing what's going to happen to the guy, you know, maybe if somebody did something, he wouldn't have been dead.
Unfortunately, people have to help themselves.
Yeah.
All you can do is extend the helping hand.
Yeah.
They can turn you down.
On that dark note, we're starting off another episode of the Terrific Podcast. Here's what the story's about today, Jerry. And I'm going to be serious with you, Jerry. I went to the first ever Indie Comic Creators Convention.
Okay.
ICC3.
Okay. Last weekend.
Last Saturday at New Haven, Southern Connecticut State University, my alma mater, where I graduated, because one, why didn't they call me? I'm like, come on, I should have been getting an honorary degree, but I already have a degree. And second, it was a comic convention. But the premise of it was it was all these new talents, these people that want to be the next
self-published
people. They want to be the next Robert Kirkman. They want to be the next, you name it.
Right.
So I go in there. And this is why I ask you for your professionalism. I did see some artists I knew, like Eric Talbot, Jamie Jones, Jim Lawson. They worked on the Turtles and stuff. They're professional. And I don't know if you remember Jamie Jones. He came to a couple of my shows in Bridgeport. And he lives in Florida. He moved to South Carolina. He's an artist, works for IDW. But when I came to his table, I said, oh, hello, Jamie. Nice to see you. Dropped what he was doing, stood right up, put his hand out. Oh, nice to see you again. It's that old school greedy. Doesn't matter what job he has. Farmer, doctor, stood up, put his hand out, greeted you. I saw dozens of these kids that have these new books.
Yeah.
I call them kids because they're mostly young.
Right.
One guy I went up to, he's coming to the show because...
Not because they're sheep.
No.
Yeah.
No, kids are goats, baby goats.
Okay.
Lambs are baby sheep. Jerry, on Zoology 101. Okay. What I'm saying is, I went up to one fella, I started talking to him, and he had this book called, and I'm not singling him out, but it was called Woodstake.
Okay.
And the premise was a vampire at the Woodstock rock concert. Kind of clever.
Yeah,
you know,
cool.
The Dracula's walking around, all these hippies are there.
Yeah.
No one's noticing him. He could be sucking a lot of blood.
Right.
Bites down on a kid who's tripping. Next thing, Dracula's tripping out. It could be funny, you know? The cover had the title, but no credits on who wrote or drew it.
Okay.
So I flipped the book over. No credits on the back.
Huh.
Who wrote, drew it. I looked at the spine.
Yeah.
It didn't have the spine. I said, okay. First time out, he didn't. He had three or four other books.
Oh.
He had another book that was a science fiction story.
Yeah, yeah.
He had another book that was like a sex.
And you sure he cover. Did them?
He did them.
Okay.
He was the guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said to him, "I don't. Can I offer you some criticism?
Right.
Yeah. Sure. These look great. The artwork's fantastic. Oh yeah, I got an artist from South America, Brazil. He's a great guy. Blah blah blah. Not saying anything. But how do I know Where do you find out more information? There's no URL. Right. Is this a three-issue series? Oh, no, there's four and five. Well, where does it say that?
Right.
Well, if you read, I go, yeah, but you got to say.
Do you sell them through the mail?
Do you sell them through the mail? Right. Are they online? Can I download them? Right. What's your website? None of that information is there. And he started going, well, you know, I understand. So he took notes. And I said, I'm not beating you up, buddy. Right. I'm trying to help you.
Yeah.
If you're going to sell, you got to sell. Then I went up to another kid who was, I was watching, was sitting there the whole time. Just looking out at everybody. Oh, hi, how are you? Yeah. Never got up. Is this your book? Yeah, it's my book. What's it about? Oh, it's about alien invasion. Okay. How long have you been doing it? Oh, it's the first time I ever did it. Just came out. Yeah. Okay. Why should I give you my money? And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, there's art schools, there's classes in writing. In fact, Mark Wade and Howard Chaykin will be doing his class at Trificon Friday morning from 10 to 2 called, you know, How to Get Create Comics. Really cool, informative by professionals. But as a professional, Joe, and you do this too, you go to conventions.
Yes.
There's an art of selling that has to be used when you're starting out.
I don't think they teach them that.
I said, if you've been around decades, so you know how, you've been to shows, you know how things work.
Yeah.
If you're just starting out, they could be the greatest book ever told, but they're not selling their stuff.
Right.
Very few people I saw at this show actually stood up and said, hi, I'm Joe Smith, and this is my new book. It's all about this alien.
Well, you've got to engage with
people. And engage people.
Yeah.
People don't, if you want money to come out of my wallet or my pocket, you've got to try to meet me halfway.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But I mean, so, you looked at the books?
I was flipping
did
through the
like
books.
Them?
I did buy some
buy
of
them. Yeah.
Expect you to buy them.
Right, but here's the thing.
Now, how does it work if you're at a show? Say you were that kid and you were trying to sell Messenger. That's your book. How do you sell Messenger, Jerry?
I have a stand. I have a price there. I have my...
You have it standing up, wonderful.
Yes.
It's like at a point
of purchase
display.
I made a little stand up,
right.
So I got two
it's
issues,
not laying flat.
Issues.
That's what I saw. A lot of people was laying flat.
Yeah.
That's a little awkward.
And
you're
whenever somebody would come by to have me sign stuff, I'd say, oh, would you like to buy a copy of my self-published book? And it never worked. It works sometimes, but a lot of times people don't. But it's like most times they go, oh, I didn't know that existed. And I said,
well,
here's your chance.
Yeah.
And I said, here's the two issues. This
do
is
you do an elevator
story.
Pitch? Do you kind of give them an idea what it's about?
I do. The problem is that no one teaches that.
No one does. Like that's what I started getting frustrated.
Rachel went to SCAD in Atlanta.
Which is the school of
art and design.
Art and design,
But it was like she was there under the, you know, comic book program, right?
Yes.
They made them as part of their school credit. They had to do a little convention.
Oh,
they had
okay.
to create a book and go to this little mini con to sell their stuff.
Yeah.
And they did that, and that was their experience, is like, oh, here's how it is to sell stuff.
But that was just among students, though. It wasn't the general public.
No, it was a convention.
Oh, they went to a real convention?
Yeah, it was like a small press
show. Oh, I thought it was like an in-class
thing. It was like your show here. Yeah. It was probably that same thing. I think the problem is people don't get specific training. In other words, they can tell you at school, here's how you make a comic.
Right.
But they can't, they might even tell you,
they tell you how to sell it.
You need to engage with people and you need to talk to people.
Yes.
They may tell you that, but I think that a lot of people who like comics
are introverted.
Introverts.
Yes. Yeah.
So the thing is, what I would do if I was, and maybe they do it at the schools and it's just not getting through to everybody.
Yeah.
But I would say to anybody who wants to try to sell it themselves, because that's what you're doing.
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Is that you have to overcome your shyness, or you have to become a person, a persona at a show.
Yeah.
In other words, you're like
a salesman.
You're Andy Kaufman, Tony Clifton,
something. Yeah,
you're creating a persona that is outgoing, and you can spend the rest of the year being a
normal self. Right.
And same thing I told my daughter. I said, there's a point where people come through.
Yeah.
If you don't look approachable, they're not going to approach
you.
They're not.
You.
Because
and
there's
I saw so many 5,000
other people at a show.
Heads down, looking at their phone. I don't know if you're doing your taxes.
Yeah,
I don't know if your cat just died. I'm not going to bother you. I'm going to walk right by you.
Interrupt you, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to interrupt you.
Exactly, because you look like you're annoyed.
Yeah, yeah.
If people are, or there were a couple people that were just, and artists do this too. They'll draw to pass the time, which is fine.
Yeah.
And then when someone does stop, they never stop drawing. They just kept drawing. I go, okay. you gotta put the pencil down. You gotta like look
well,
at the guy.
Well, you have
the
to
customer.
Be able to draw and talk at the same
or draw
time.
You because I see yeah. you do that. Which yeah. again, you've been doing it for a long time. Yeah. But these people are very new in it, and I started critiquing this. One young girl comes, young lady comes by, and she has a 3-ring binder. And I said, "Oh, where are you from?" She said, "West Haven." I go, "Oh, I'm from West Haven." "Oh, yeah, where are you from?" "Oh, the beach. I know where that is."
Zupardi's Pizza.
Zupardi. We did. We started talking about Zupardi's. And I said, "Oh, what do you got there?" She goes, "Well, I'm going to art school. I'm graduating in May." And I said, "Oh, really?" She goes, "Yeah." I go, "Is that your story?" "Yeah, let me see it." So she opens the book. We're starting to look through it. I go, "What's it called?" "I don't have a title for it yet." And I go, "Well, when are you coming up with the title right, for it?" Because right. that, you know, what's yeah. Gone with the yeah. Stellar Combat? Star Wars? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So I said, "Well, you kind of should have an idea. But again, you don't have to right. marry it.
Right.
You could say the working title is,
right.
you know, Goldilocks and the right. Three Martians. Right. Whatever." So we're going through it, and it's very functional. She said she has this class, and she came up with a story, and there's this dome city, and the outside, everything's always post-apocalyptic,
right.
and after a while, you're like, it's been done. Why don't we have happiness? Everything's, the world's been destroyed. We know that. And the only people
at
are
least
here.
The pre-apocalypse.
So, but she starts going through every page with me,
right.
and show me that I don't need to know
right.
the story.
Right.
That's why I would buy it. If right. you're going to read it to me, right. why do I need to spend the money? And then it stopped, and then she just had the last page. And I said, "Well, where's the ending?" She goes, right. "Well, our teacher told us we could just go ahead and do the ending." I go, "Well, by the time you graduate in May, you are going to go back." And
right.
She had a pencil. She had it laid out.
Right.
I go, "When are you going to finish the rest of it?"
Right.
"Well, maybe between now and then." I go, "If I was you, I would finish those pages and have a completed thing by the yeah. time I graduated. Have a title for it." And then I started doing the whole thing about, "Do they teach you how to sell this today?"
Yeah.
She goes, "Well, not really." I go, "They really should have people from the outside world yeah. come in and go, you know, sell me your idea. Like to an elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Like you're in a Hollywood studio.
Yeah.
Sell me in 30 seconds. Why do I want to read Goldilocks and the Three Martians?" You know
yeah.
what I mean? But it's just frustrating because I saw such talent.
Yeah.
You'd see artwork that was amazing. And then some guys would start to tell you their story. And you're like, "That's a really creative story." But I go, "But you're not there. You're
yeah.
only you're almost halfway there.
Yeah.
Like you got the ball. There's the goal line,
yeah.
and you drop it at the 20-yard line. You go, eh,
but maybe
I got close
show,
enough."
Maybe a show like this is training for them too.
I told the guy,
school.
I said, "Why don't you come in and teach a class
yeah.
about how to?" I
marketing.
Said, "I would love to do a panel for you guys."
Someone should do a marketing thing,
yeah.
which is ultimately how you would put
and
yourself out.
There's no
out
wrong
to the
or
audience.
Right on it. I mean, I do stuff sometimes. I
yeah.
drive around with the flyers.
Yeah.
Sometimes people want to talk to you. Sometimes they don't want to talk to you,
yeah.
but. If you don't try.
Yeah, but at shows, the worst thing you can do is have your head down.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, because
yeah.
no one's going to approach you, and
no.
then you're going to go, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Nobody cares about my
Nobody
stuff.
Nobody wants it. I didn't make any money.
Yeah.
Well, I have seen the worst, though. I remember Baltimore Comic-Con years ago. There was a guy who was standing out in the aisle,
yeah.
like a carnival barker. "Hey, where are you going? You know what
right.
you want to read? You want to read the greatest book ever
right,
read?"
Right.
And you're like, "Dude, step back.
Yeah.
Don't shove it in my face." Because
yeah,
now
yeah.
you're turning people off because
yeah.
they want to get away from you.
But that one guy who did... I can't think of his name, but he was
Robert
at Baltimore.
Kirkman.
You know, there was a guy at Baltimore who was like that. And I
When
kind
was
of
this?
A couple years ago.
Okay, this is when the guy I'm talking about.
And he won like a... I think he won...
Most Obnoxious Seller.
Awards for this one book that he did.
Yes.
But he was... It's David Peepo's.
Oh, yeah.
He was doing that.
Yeah.
But that's not bad because ultimately
you
when
remembered
walk
him.
By,
You're
you
still
remembered
talking about
him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the I mean you could be over the top about it, but you need to do something.
You need to do something.
You know,
yeah.
the thing when I first started doing conventions
right.
as a fan,
yeah.
I would go around and I would see how Mike Grell, Howard Chaykin, John Byrne
Chaykin?
I'm saying
okay.
all the young guys at that time,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Starlin, all those guys were the
was
hot
Was Chaykin studs. Like he is now, or was he nicer?
He was nasty.
Oh, God. I was going to say, wait, he got
This
better?
Would have been like late 70s.
Late 70s, yeah.
And, I mean, not
nasty,
nasty
in which way? Like,
he was just
he was
very
Brooklyn.
Blunt. He was very blunt.
He was like, yeah.
So, but anyways, I would watch these guys, and I would see how they'd interact with the fans.
Yes.
And I would, some people, I would, purposely, I would not go talk to Howard because
You don't want to get ripped apart.
He scared me.
Yeah.
You know, Byrne was a little intimidating.
Yeah.
Mike Grell was...
I'm talking to you. I'm just
Mike,
talking to you.
Mike Grell was super nice with
yeah,
everybody.
Yeah, he is very nice, yeah.
And that was like, oh, there's a role model.
Yes.
You know?
So all the people that say Jerry Ordway is the nicest guy in the show, they could credit Mike Grell for showing
Mike
is you that.
He was always Mike super is still nice very to nice. Everybody.
Yes, he drew me a you nice know? Captain yeah. America.
I'm just saying, like, as a role model for a young guy, you saw somebody handle it really yeah. well. I mean,
Starlin's very nice.
Well, I mean, and Mike Grell would go to those shows to make money.
Yeah,
he worked his butt off at those shows. He
Mark
didn't
Bagley's
hang
like
out
that
with
too.
People.
Yeah.
He took his art list back to the room yeah. and yeah. stayed up till you know.
Well, he
all
told
hours.
Me Ron Frenz was drawn all night
yeah.
long.
Yeah. yeah. So I mean, there's a point where that's dedication.
Yeah.
You know, you want to disappoint somebody if they want a sketch. The sketch is going to be available. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
So that's a big thing. But you Thank need you. People like that. And it's not to say that Chaykin or. You know, any of these other guys were wrong.
Yes.
They just weren't, you know, they had tons of people there anyway.
Right.
Because they were talented people.
Yeah.
But, like, Howard was quick to shoot somebody.
He's kind of like
harsh,
that. Yeah.
Harsh critiques yes. or whatever. And maybe well, because he had gotten harsh critiques.
From Gil Kane.
Gil Kane and maybe Neil
tough
Adams
love.
Was tough
yeah.
on the, you know.
Well, Neil was always intimidating, but he was also very nice.
Neil was tough as a critique guy.
Right.
But, again, I mean... You see, if you're a kid coming to a show,
yeah,
you don't know if somebody. I always my first question is if someone shows me artwork,
yeah,
do you really want to do comics? Do you like drawing?
Yes,
because they're a different thing. Yeah.
When it's sunny out, you're going to be inside.
If you like drawing and it brings you some kind of joy, it doesn't matter if you become professional or not.
Yes,
as long as you like what you're doing.
Right.
So don't let someone's critique say. Oh, you should put down your pencil and, you know, get a job at a butcher shop or something.
Yeah.
That's a different thing.
Do you like working with your hands? Yeah. How about digging ditches, kid?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, so that was always the divide. And when I go to a show, I know that not everybody who comes to me is going to become a professional.
Right.
But do you want to kill their dream? Right? I always try to be honest. I say, look, comics are very, very competitive. You may not get
it's
into
like
comics, but if you
it's like...
It's
like being a pro athlete.
If you like doing it...
Yes.
Right, it's like being an athlete. It's like, okay,
you're
not going to
be good
get
at
on,
baseball, but you're not going to be on the
you're
majors.
You're not going to get on the team,
but
do you like playing baseball?
Right.
Do you like playing basketball?
Right.
Then play it.
Yeah.
Don't let somebody tell you you shouldn't.
But if you think you're going to be making $1 million like Robert Kirkman and you're going to retire... I think a lot of them nowadays all have that... you don't know how many guys I go up to now. They go, well, you know, it's a sales pitch, or I'm making this a movie pitch, and I'm trying to make a movie out of it. It's like, well, then make a movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, if you want to go make a movie, make a movie.
Yeah.
Don't sit there and think your storyboard and your script is a comic book and then hope IDW or Image or Marvel comes and buys that property.
That's a different kind of marketing.
They're going to buy it from you. You're never going to... Oh, well, that's a whole other story.
No, but it's a different kind of marketing to try to create pitches for stuff and maybe you get an agent to sell
look
it
at that
girl,
look at a hench girl, Kristen Gudsden. She used to come to my show. She's local. She made that book called Hench Girl.
Yep.
They sold that 6-8 issue series to Showtime at one point for development. I don't know if they're going to make an animated show out of it. I don't know if they're going to make a series. You know, I don't know what happened to it, but she
maybe
made
that's
some money.
Bucks
I mean, she got bucks, and now she does more of these young adult books. I saw one the other day at the shop. They just had it there.
Yeah.
But you know, it's what are you in it for? But it was just frustrating watching so many talented people in the room and just saying, guys, you're not really doing your job. There's a lot of people here, but you're not getting up and you're not selling anything.
But the reality is, people don't want to buy your stuff.
Yeah.
You have to look at it, because they don't buy my stuff either.
I got my thing
there. I tried to price it low so that you can buy it and not go, oh, this is a lot more than a regular comic.
Yeah.
And I do that. I'm not making any money off of it.
No, but you know what was interesting? The whole show was sponsored by this company out of the Midwest. I can't think of it right now. But they print comics. It's yellow and red.
Yeah, Greco.
Yeah. I don't think it's called Greco, but I don't know what it's called.
Comics Wellspring.
Comics Wellspring. That's the thing.
Greco. Yeah,
that's the guy.
They did my, they did my Proton.
He was there. He was the owner of it.
Yeah.
And he sponsored the whole event. And I was like, and they had different
size
books.
They sponsored an Artist Alley section in Baltimore, too, last year.
Did they really? I should tell them to do something here, because I didn't know. Because I'm always like, how do we get the show programmed to look like a comic? They had free templates for the sizes.
No, you go on their website and you drop your artwork into it and you create a PDF.
It was amazing. I was like, so that was really cool. And so he's there, and I don't know how the pricing is, but all these people, they were like, oh, yeah, I got it from Comics Wellspring.
No, their quality is really good.
Yeah.
They're expensive because you have to ship them from Michigan.
Oh.
So drop ship.
But the runs are good. You don't have to do like 10,000. You can do a couple hundred.
You can do 25.
Oh, really? That's small.
It's just the cost goes down as you print more.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
No, they're good. And you know, they basically put...
digest size books.
Yeah, you can do square bound.
They did. They have like little tiny guys. Yeah.
You're basically... They're allowing you to do small press.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the problem... I think perception is a problem because people think, you know, maybe they don't prepare you for the reality.
Right.
The reality is no one's going to buy your thing without you selling it.
Yeah, especially
nowadays.
You got
to push it. What differentiates you from 5,000
other
people
selling
the same book about alien invasion?
Most of the time when I heard alien invasion, I'm like, oh my God, you're like eighth person. I've heard say it's about an alien virus. I'm like, really?
You got to do your thing and you got to sell it.
And the ones that aren't the standout are ones that were told, like the guy told you, the Woodstock thing.
Yeah.
I go, that's a good idea. It's like the Night Stalker in a historical event.
Yeah.
Like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer,
you know
what I mean?
Right.
It's like, oh, that's kind of insane.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you can have a great hook. You said this guy got his art done by somebody in another country.
I said that too. I said, how did you find an artist in South America?
There's probably brokers online.
Well, there was. Yeah. They said they just have like a page where it's like, need an artist? Like handyman.com.
Yeah.
Need a letterer?
And
go to this guy.
Probably the exchange rate's good.
And the artwork was phenomenal. Yeah. And they're thinking maybe this guy will get discovered. Maybe a scout? Do they have them anymore? Talent scout? Go for Marvel or DC?
But the thing is, if your book gets some acclaim, then you might get attention from Marvel or DC if you want that. You say, hey, look, my book just won a Ringo Award or whatever.
Yeah. Well, he was there, Adam Walenta.
But I'm saying that
he was like,
I
won a Ringo Award.
Yeah. You know, it gives you some bragging rights that maybe helps you separate yourself from the other 5,000 people.
And that's the thing, too, because I think about Terrificon, and then people were asking me, oh, do you have any tables left? I said, we kind of sold out already.
Yeah.
But you don't want to have guys that are really doing... It's so weird. Some guys did prose, like little short story novels.
Right.
Some guys did graphic novels. Some guys did floppy comic books. So, and then you get the guy who's just drawing. You know what I mean? The artist alleys are kind of like broken up into everything nowadays. I have to screen out the guys that are there selling like crochet, like very crafty things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like stickers. And that's fine. But you shouldn't be sitting next to a guy who's trying to sell a comic book, because if I'm walking down the aisle, I see t-shirt, stickers, toys. Suddenly you're selling a comic. I'm like, that guy should be off to a separate section, you know?
I don't know. There's a difference of
opinion. When you go to the store, you go to the bookstore, they don't have them all mixed up. They have
But they do mix.
Horror section.
Like, if you go to a mall, both coffee places aren't going to be next to each other.
No.
They space them out so that you walk across the store. And you do that with the mall, with the convention, is that you make people walk through your hall to get to the celebrity signings.
I do. That's why it's in the back. Yeah.
But I mean, I think there's some, you know, merit in mixing things up rather than having all the guys who are making macrame hats.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
In the same spot.
And the thing of it is, not everyone's book's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Not every book's going to be like, oh my God, that's the second coming.
But again, here's the thing. Bottom line is, if you get off on it, and it's fun for you to go to the show and have a table.
And you make a couple bucks.
Maybe you make a couple bucks, but you probably meet people.
You do.
You know? And you're probably working at home.
Yeah.
So the fact that you're having real life interactions is so much better than internet reaction.
Was it always like this in the 70s and 80s where there's independent comics back then? Or not as many?
No, there were people.
Now it seems easier.
It was harder to print books because you had to commit to print
a big
runs.
Press run. Yeah.
But
how did ElfQuest and all those guys get off the ground? Even Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
They
were all black and white.
Right, but the thing is, there was less books out. So those guys could probably still print 10,000 copies of something and sell it.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, there was a business there.
Yeah.
It's not the same as, like, you know, printing 200.
No, I told you, I met Eastman and Laird. They were selling Turtles out of the trunk of their car.
No,
in New Haven. They had the first three issues.
Right.
And I wish I bought all three, then I'd be a rich person. But they literally were on Chapel Street in New Haven on Book World.
I feel like those came out when I moved to West Haven.
Yeah, it was 85.
Well, I remember in 87.
I met them in 85.
That Harold Finer in West Haven.
Yeah. I remember that. Bayshore.
At one point coming in. He had also the Tick comic.
Yep.
Ben Edlund.
New England Comics.
The Tick.
Yeah.
And those were books. I remember, like, oh, it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I didn't care for how it looked.
Right.
It was definitely not my thing anyways.
Was, you know what turned me on? It was black and white.
But then everybody was talking about how... What, like, Dark Horse did black and white books.
The Cerebus was around. Dave Sims' book.
Concrete was a great book.
Yeah, yeah.
That Paul Chadwick. It was just a really entertaining book. Dark Horse had Dark Horse Presents.
Yep.
They'd have Aliens.
Yep.
They've had
I had Pacific
Time
Comics
Cop,
had Star those, Slayer and
yeah,
Rocketeer.
But those were black and white books and they were fine.
Oh, the black and white. Yeah.
But back in the 70s, you started having Eclipse Comics was that was small press.
What was that one that did Warp? Well, the first comics came around. Warp was this play that was based on Neil Adams.
That was First Comics. And First Comics was a more traditional comic company. They were color books, and they launched with, you know, E-Man and
American Flag,
American Flag.
Slayer.
They had John Sable.
John Sable. That's it. Yeah.
It was a different time. But like in the late 70s, you had fanzines were sold through the mail.
Yeah.
Or somebody, there were usually people who were either California, New York. Yeah. They would sell them at a Creation Con in New York was the big con.
I remember getting the Comics Reader.
San Diego Con.
Yeah.
You know,
it was just like fanzines, like you said.
But you would sell those. The Comic Reader was a subscription thing, so you either got it in the mail.
Oh, really?
Or they drop shipped them to comic stores.
They did. They would sell them at my shop. Yeah.
In the Comic Reader came out in the early 70s. I have all
those. Really?
Yeah. They were digest size.
Yeah.
I remember buying them at... this comic, it wasn't even a comic store, it was a secondhand store that had old comics.
Yeah.
And the guy started ordering stuff like that. So he had the guys
Journal.
Who did Comic Reader.
Yeah.
They would get the book printed in Menominee Falls and they would drive down. So we would get it on a Friday.
Yeah.
They would drop off, like, you know, 50 copies at this guy's place.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'd all have the fresh news.
I remember there would be some strips in the back of those. You.
So sorry.
That's all right. You would have those Amazing Heroes was another one. Do you remember that one?
But that was a little later.
That was in the mid-80s.
The Fantagraphics existed. Gary Groth.
Why do I know that name?
Gary Groth, Fantagraphics.
Comics right.
Journal.
Oh, yeah, Comics Journal. Yeah.
But Fantagraphics existed doing stuff. And at the time, like in the 70s, it would be like you could actually attract someone like Neil Adams or somebody like that. You ever see Warp?
That's what I'm saying, Warp.
Not the Warp...
Not the
Broadway
play.
Show,
but
the actual fanzine, or Phase 1, was it called? Phase 1.
I don't know what Phase 1 is.
It was a 8.5x11 with, you know, regular kind of saddle-stitched cardboard cover. Neil Adams did a story about the guy who was the school shooter. The guy who was shooting...
Oh, in Austin, Texas?
Yeah. He did a story about that.
Tower guy.
And it was a whole book built of... some professionals and some, you know, good fan artists or whatever. They would sell them for $6.
$6
was a lot.
That's a
but
lot.
It was sold through the mail.
Oh, but still, even that seemed like a lot.
I would buy them as a kid. It's like, oh my God, it's a Neil Adams story that's not going to be anywhere else.
Oh, I see.
Wally Wood did his Wit's End book.
I remember Wit's End, yeah.
I mean, those were a little ahead of the curve.
No, but I would see those in shops. I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, why is it so much
and
fun?
And Wit's End was fun. Marvel had their thing with Marvel Mania.
Yeah.
And then they did Foom.
I saw Fooms. I got a couple Fooms. Well, anyway, the art of selling was in desperate need at this show. Very good idea. It was the first one ever. I asked the kid, what are you doing the next one? He goes, I don't know yet. I'm like, see, this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The first thing's out of your way. Here's first issue. What's next? I don't know yet.
Well, here's a question.
You got to do that. I told him he could have tables at my show.
Yeah.
I offered him. I said, why don't you have a table, recruit people, and I don't care. You're not going to take away from my terrific comics.
Right.
You want to have the movie stars? Go ahead.
Right.
They're just trying to have a nice event for independent creators to come to and show them. Like,
and you know what they do, but you know what they do at some of these shows too is they let people split a booth.
Yeah.
So in other words, two guys sit there.
They don't
have a lot of space to display, but you have two people in one table, and it helps the cost.
That's fine. I have no rules about who can set up. I don't want 20 guys at a table.
No, but you could
fine.
Have somebody take two tables and have people rotate in and out so they're not there for a whole day.
Weekend. Oh, yeah.
Come in for 3 hours and then we rotate out. This guy gets to sit there.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Well, that was there. I saw that. What other things did I see this weekend? Independent comic creator. So if they do it again, and there was people from around the country.
Yeah.
That wasn't just local people.
But were they all students?
They were young.
I was going to say, it sounds they were like something college that would have been,
I was wondering how they got people.
Southern Connecticut.
Because the guy was from Wisconsin. Yeah. I even said, oh, Jerry's from Wisconsin. Yeah. They were all about early 20s, maybe.
Yeah, no, they're probably students in some graphic arts or comic
book. Yeah. They had one guy that was like 30-something. Yeah. There was a guy that works at D.C. who's like an assistant to all the DC guys, like to James. I don't know what his role is at DC Comics, but he's like a.
What was his name?
I can't think of it. He knew me. Yeah. He knew the show. He knew all about me. Yeah, actually, he's probably listening to this now. He knew my dog's name. He knew this and that. I go, what are you doing? He goes, oh, my job is to be with the creators
creator
at convention. Yes, at the convention. Okay. So he'd be like, oh, well, I'm with Scott Snyder. And he knew like Scott Snyder's whole biography. Right. Here's Greg Capullo. Oh, Greg was the missing. And he just has this in his head. And I'm like, I guess it's like a PR type of guy, PR agent, public relations.
Well, you need people to help out if you're, you know.
Yeah. So he was good about that. He was with this fellow that wrote that book. And the guy bought a table at my show because I left there.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, just because of you guys, I'm going to make another row at Terrificon. It's August 16th to the 18th at Mohegan Sun. And I'm going to call it Indie Comic Creator whatever. So you have to show me that you're working on a book. You have to print a book, not this I'm drawing or I'm making, you know, crocheted toys.
Right.
It has to be a comic book.
Right.
If it's printed and published, it's even better.
Right.
And that's it. So come to the show and do it. We'll see. I already sold two of them.
Yeah.
I put it on sale yesterday and already two people bought it.
I mean, again, I think, you know, you
But
do...
you don't want 100 of them because, again, I just feel bad because it's like...
Yeah.
It's too many. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe 20.
Yeah.
200 is overwhelming. You're not going to find, you know.
Well, you were telling me something. This is interesting. I was thinking about this.
Everything's cryptozoic, too. That's another thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's all about Bigfoot. I'm like, yeah, there's like 20 guys.
That's a big trend.
It is. I mean, everybody had a, well, the cryptozoic four.
Right.
It's the fantastic four. It's like Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot. Right. They all team up. Like, it's a cute idea, but I've heard it six times. I was telling you about what?
No, I was going to say, like, when you do any kind of show.
Yeah.
Everybody's competing against everybody else for the money that somebody walks into the room.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So one
We've
of the
talked
things,
about this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes it harder to sell. And again, I was thinking about it with low-end stuff. People are more willing to buy high-end stuff.
I know.
Because there's a perceived value to it.
Maybe that's why Dollar General just closed all their stores.
I do think that there's something to that. Like, even the creators that you have with their groups who are signing books with the, you know... CGC and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It becomes kind of like this perceived value because they're charging
30,
50 bucks,
bucks
a book or something.
Yeah.
Which is kind of unfortunate, but it's almost like there isn't a trickle down effect.
No, but then you look like a bargain because Jerry's only $5.
But then why are they not buying a $5 book? It's because they'd rather spend their
$50,
$40 or whatever on a signing Jim Lee getting a book signed or something.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. I was talking to the guys at the comic store yesterday about that because there is this kind of like perception of like you're willing to support a Kickstarter that costs $30 for the same book that I'm selling for $5.
Yeah, I know.
But there's something about like, oh, I helped get that made rather than, hey, if you bought this, you'll help get the next one made.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's perception, like you said. Yeah. So that happened. So... That was my whole thing about they definitely need to teach a class on how to sell yourself.
When I got into comics, I went to DC and Marvel in, I think it was 77. I'm pretty sure it was 77. And got turned down. But I met a couple people. But I always think, like, I am so lucky to have not gotten into comics then. Because I had no real world experience.
Right.
So instead, I worked for a couple of years in commercial art. I had, you know, a 9-to-5 job.
Yep.
I met other people who knew what freelance was.
Yeah.
And how to set yourself up as a business and to give you advice. You know, you have to buy your own health care.
Oh, yeah.
You also have to put away part of your check for taxes.
Retirement.
No, for taxes, because people never think that.
Yeah.
They get paid for something and it's like April 15th. Yeah. Wait, how am I going
to
come up
pay
with
taxes?
This? I spent it all.
Yeah.
But that's stuff that nobody teaches you in comics. So in the early 80s, I started telling Dick Giordano and Pat Bastien, is like, you guys need to do something for those kids that you're hiring virtually out of school.
Right.
Some to real show world them classes. How to run their own business.
Yeah.
And what they did then was, it was later, maybe later 80s, they did the Freelancer. And it was a newsletter that DC sent out to everybody.
Oh, really?
It had advice, tax tips on how to find an accountant. On
really?
What, yeah, yeah. And that
did
was
a, Marvel do something like that or no?
No. But it was something that I was pushing them for, you know, a while, and it made sense to them, too. It's like...
How long did that last? I never heard about this.
It ran through the 90s.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it was like a little 8.5, or like a fold, like a fanzine size mailer that they sent to anybody who was on their freelance list.
No shit.
So it gave you tips, like...
I never heard of that.
I still have copies of it.
Wow.
Yeah, so, it was cool.
What do they do with it now? Do they put it online, or you just they don't even buy
I would
it?
Hope somebody has guidelines. Because
do you think
imagine,
so?
I would hope so, because they don't do withholding on your checks.
No, they don't.
Because you're basically freelance.
Yeah, you gotta write your own taxes.
Yeah, you're independent contractor. So that's the biggest trap. You always see artists, from even when I first got into comics, you'd see artists come in, and they would be like, start panicking, like in April, going, I'm willing to do these commissions.
Yeah,
I need to do 5 commissions, or I need to sell artwork
because
they didn't put a sign it. You got it. You have to save at least a quarter of each check,
right?
Just to be just maybe case. More, but you at least you're covered,
right?
You know, and regardless whether you do health insurance, I always bought my own, even though I didn't necessarily need it, and it was simpler back then too.
I wonder if that's why there's so many commissions online right now.
No, there are.
No, I was just thinking that because you say that
people are trying to get all.
The last couple of weeks, I'm seeing so many people opening their things up for commissions. It's because it's tax time, and they have to pay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I saw some real... Speaking of art, I did meet legendary Bronze Age comic artist Ken Landgraf was at the show. Now, Ken worked on some books in the 70s.
He was like
world
an assistant.
Finest, yeah,
for
background,
Buckler.
A lot of artists.
Yeah.
He also says his credit was that he did the first ever solo Wolverine backup comic where Wolverine met like Hercules in a bar.
Oh yeah,
it was like one of those 5-pagers or something.
Was that Marvel Presents?
Probably one of those. Yeah, but he did say he was one of the. He had his own independent comic book.
Yeah, Astro something.
Yeah.
Astro Man or something.
Something like that. So he was there with his wife, and they were doing sketch. He had a lot of artwork. I got a bunch of 11x17s, huge, fully inked.
Yeah.
You know, Captain America, the All-Star Squadron, Wonder Woman. He's doing a lot of World War II stuff.
Yeah.
But for $100, they were huge. They were, it was a pretty good bargain, but he had lots of it. He asked to come to Terrificon. I said, well, we have a table. You're more than welcome to come up. He's only in the city.
Yeah.
But I met him, and I don't know, what was the other thing? The other thing that we're going to talk about today is not about movies. Were you surprised by the Oscars, real quick? You knew Oppenheimer was going to win. It was kind of like a shoo-in.
Yeah.
I was really hoping Paul Giamatti would win for Best Actor, but Cillian Murphy did a great job, so you can't take it away.
Yeah.
They can't have a tie.
Yeah.
I mean, fight it out, boys. Here's
a
knife.
He's in the whole movie. There's no confusion as to whether he's the lead.
But they were doing the White Clam Pizza special over at Pepe's in honor of Paul Giamatti's.
And the thing about the movie that Giamatti, not only is it a flashback.
Holdovers,
it 70s. Is a 70s story, but it's the type of movie in the 70s that would have been an Oscar winner.
It looked like Goodbye, Mr. Chips, or Gene Hackman.
Goodbye, Girl, or any of those.
It
was the
Journey
thing.
Yeah. Had that feel to it. Yeah, but Oppenheimer was Oppenheimer. What are you going to do?
I liked Oppenheimer. I do think it's funny since the last week on Twitter.
Yeah,
all kinds of people are like bashing Christopher Nolan now, and it was like,
why?
It's because he won an Oscar.
Oh, so he sold out. Is that what?
No, I think people it's like, oh, he thinks he's so good. No, other people thought he was good.
They voted on it. Yeah,
but there's like this weird thing where people build you up, and then they're suddenly like, oh,
I don't know that
guy. Turn him down. No. Did you see that? There's rumored
that
he might be
doing
the Prisoner movie.
The Patrick McGowan story?
That's a perfect movie for him to do.
With the old giant weird bubble thing?
Yeah, the concept is great. You know? That would be kind of a way for him to do his James Bond movie without doing a James Bond movie as well. But it's twisty.
It is. Yeah.
I could see that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but if there were somewhere...
Who would be the prisoner,
he got
though?
Talked about it.
Clive Owen.
Well, they should get Daniel Craig. Just like with
they can give it to Henry Cavill and it will bomb.
But I'm saying, like, just
Daniel
like with Patrick,
Craig.
With Patrick
Craig, because he was James Bond. Yeah,
like Patrick McGoohan was Secret
Agent
Man.
X, yeah.
Right.
That's a good one. I saw him even talk about Star Wars the other day.
Patty Jenkins just got back on Rogue Squadron, renewed her deal. And she had dropped it because she was supposed to be doing Wonder Woman 3.
Well, that didn't happen.
She had to exit that. So now she's back on with that.
Aquaman is on HBO. Did you watch it again?
No, I bought the Blu-ray.
Did you?
Yeah.
It came out?
Yeah, it just came out.
Was there any extra features?
Speaking of Aquaman.
Yes, Jason Momoa.
Saw it twice, didn't like it.
Yeah.
I said to Rachel.
The first one or the second one?
First one. Okay. I said to Rachel, do you want to watch this? And I said, or do you need to see the first one? And she's like, I kind of like to see the first one. I said, okay.
But she liked it.
So I watched it with no expectations. Yeah. I let go of all of what I hoped would be there.
Yes.
And I liked it. You literally hated it, we were laughing about it in the theaters. I know. I'm sitting there going,
because
well,
now you know it's a goofy movie.
You could see what it is. It's like you have to commit to the fact that they're doing King Arthur, which was a problem for me at the time. Yeah. But it's basically that.
No, we're done. We got
it. I would only do it if he was doing it.
No, so you want to work the peer pressure?
No.
Come on.
No, everybody cool's doing it. That sound you hear is our enabler in the background. Everybody cool's doing it.
But yeah, so I actually found myself appreciating it for what it was. It's like, oh, okay, it's like a King Arthur story.
Well, what was going on in the second one? That wasn't no King Arthur story.
I like the second one better than I thought the first, so I'll be curious to see if I watch it with Rachel if I still like it. I did like it.
My wife likes Aquaman because she likes Jason Momoa, but I'm like, what?
He's got charm.
He does have charm. I still think he would have been better as a Kraven the Hunter. I think that would have been a great casting for him against Tom Holland because just physically.
But it's true, he would have been Lobo perfect.
Oh, perfect Lobo. Yeah. He still could be.
Yeah.
I saw Peacemaker. They said that the first season doesn't really count in the new.
They picked episodes. It's like episode three, episode seven, whatever. Those are really still part of it. I didn't know they get that picky about it.
I saw him at the
thing.
Oscars.
That's the funny thing is that people, as many people who hate the idea of continuity, there seems to be more of them now that hate the idea of continuity when that was the appeal as a fan that they're all connected.
Yeah.
But I can live with the fact
without,
that it's
Batman.
Maybe
separate,
that doesn't count. Maybe this counts.
Just give me.
It's a movie. Do you enjoy
good
it?
Story. That's all. I don't need to have this epic thing. They did that with the Avengers. It's like they already did that. Why don't you just make one-offs? I told you that's why they ruined Spider-Man because I don't want him fighting Galactus. I want to see him fighting the Kingpin or the Scorpion and a little small thing. You don't want to have him on the cosmic level because. Yeah. Daredevil should not be fighting the Guardians of the Galaxy.
And that's a problem. But that's a problem that exists in movies is that they always have to have
epic
the big story.
Yeah,
like Gotham can't just be about crime stuff. It's got a flood.
That's what that,
or they got to blow up
the
bridge.
Yeah, the last Batman movie was fine when it was a detective movie.
Yeah.
And then the last half hour is a different movie. I go, what's this big explosion?
It's meant to show probably in the second movie that he is trusted.
Yeah,
so he's gone from being a vigilante to being a symbol of good.
I get it, but it was like. It doesn't need to be huge.
But again, at least that's self-contained as opposed to everything being about nuclear war or the world ending or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Screw that nuclear war stuff.
But I'm saying, like, you could do your, like, the Fantastic Four movie, right? You do your Galactus story. That's basically the day the Earth stood still.
Yeah.
Right?
Basically, yeah.
So if you do that well, it's going to work as a superhero movie and a science fiction movie.
Then you could do your negative zone. See, I think that's where they went off the space with Ant-Man 3. It was too big a jump from the traditional, like, heist movie.
And they
movie.
Probably fed that storyline because that's the beginning of the next thing. Here's where you stand. I still wonder if any of these movies would have played better if they'd come out in their original order.
Oh.
And even the DC ones.
Yeah.
You know, if they'd come out when they were supposed to.
Because they were kind of planned in certain ways.
You know?
Like that Doctor Strange, the Madness thing was all screwed up because of, was it COVID? I can't even remember what did it. You were supposed to watch WandaVision.
Right.
And then it was supposed to go right into Doctor Strange.
I thought WandaVision was delayed.
What? Yeah, because it was supposed to be Winter Soldier first.
Yeah.
Then WandaVision. No, it was supposed to be Winter Soldier. Then Doctor Strange was supposed to come out.
Right.
Then WandaVision was supposed to come out.
I think it was.
And then Spider-Man was. Yeah. It was something at the time. Yeah. They had a certain order.
Yeah.
But then they started flopping. Yeah, because then Shang-Chi came out or Shang-Chi. Yeah. You were like, what's this about?
Oh, did you see the news about that?
They're going to have Iron Fist in it, but not my Iron Fist. Yeah. Not my boy that was at the show.
I do think
he was fine, but the story is...
It wasn't his fault.
No.
He was playing a certain type,
Finn
and he
Jones.
Did it well.
Finn Jones.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... But what's interesting to me, though, with the Marvels especially, is that those movies had an order.
Yeah.
And the order was meant to put an end to one wave.
Yeah.
then Ant-Man was going to be the beginning, but Ant-Man got pushed ahead because
and then it screwed everything
it had
up.
Most of it done.
Yeah.
So
it flopped Ant-Man and Marvels because Marvels was supposed to be before the Secret Invasion, I think.
And it would have
made
no sense
either. You're watching and go, wait, Sam Jackson's on here?
Yeah.
But
the
what?
Problem and a problem with all of that is that once they took over those shows and they were gonna be on Disney Plus, they're part of continuity.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you have expectations if you're doing that should be addressed.
Grand scale,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that part is annoying, I guess. It's like if you weren't saying that, you would just go, okay, that's a different version of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember having that problem with
maybe
Lost, is that you're building up this big mystery
and nothing pays
off. And then
off.
Basically at the end you're like, none of that counted.
Yeah, none of that counted. You know? Yeah, sorry you wasted your time following all that stuff.
No, they didn't even say sorry you wasted your time. It's like, why are you complaining about it?
No, we gave you stories. Weren't you entertained?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't open that can of worms without.
Well, that's why I always think of all those, like the continuity of the Star Wars books. I used to read all those novels for 20 years, and then Disney took it over. They go, all that doesn't count. Yeah. Or we'll pick and choose what we want since we paid for it, but we're not going to.
But that happened in comics before that point.
Oh, yeah, well, your whole crisis thing, it's wiped away now.
It's like you pick a point, this never happened, or this didn't happen the way you wanted it to, or
for years after Crisis. Yeah.
The Crisis was supposed to be.
The relaunch.
And nobody remembered Crisis.
Yeah.
That was the whole conceit, was that Crisis didn't exist.
How long did that last?
It was
Roy Thomas
snuck into other books where someone says Crisis, and it's like, well, is he remembering there was a big fight?
Because I thought the Psycho Pirate was supposed to be the only one that remembered it.
He was the only one who remembered it, and everybody thought he was crazy because he remembered this big fight.
But then everything started coming back. Yeah. Barry Allen came back,
and that's the problem with anything that you do that's supposed to be.
Yeah.
This is how it is from now on, because there are people who are like, I don't like that. Like
I know
Keith Giffen hated the changes in the Man of Steel stuff. So he kept putting in stuff unauthorized, and then people would come to us and go, well, Keith Giffen did a Supergirl reference in there. Supergirl never existed. It's like, he shouldn't be doing that, you know?
The editor didn't take it out.
They would get in trouble, but then it never had any teeth.
Oh.
I mean, that was stuff that Byrne left was there was no editorial support for that.
Yeah.
It's like, we're giving you a chance to do this clean slate, but by the way, we're not going to police these other things.
No. That makes sense now, looking back.
Oh, another thing.
What's that?
The late Keith Giffen.
Yes.
The issue of Blue Beetle that came out last week.
I bought that with Ambush Brother, the cover.
That was supposed to be the Keith Giffen tribute. And there's a really tiny little credit in there. It's so tiny.
Kevin McGuire drew it.
No, but there's a little credit in there, like dedicated to Keith Giffen.
I didn't even see that.
It's on the title page, but it's really tiny.
Oh, see, I walked in
I'd been asked if I wanted to draw like a 7-page or 6-page story or whatever.
I just saw the cover
and I said, oh, look, Ambush Bug. And I just didn't want to work through
and
Christmas.
It was a Kevin McGuire cover, and I said, it's got to be a tribute.
Yeah.
And they only, of course, our store only bought one copy, and I just grabbed it and took it, you know, our store. Well, did you read The Batman? We'll talk about new comics. The Batman by Dan Jurgens.
It's next up in my reading.
Mike Perkins. Beautiful artwork.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of references from famous movie actors throughout the book. A lot of F-bombs that seemed out of place. I told you, it took me out of the book because they said it's an adult story.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only reason why it was an adult story is because the F-fuck was in every other thing. I'm like, okay, I guess.
Was there nudity in it?
No. No, there's no Batwang.
Because that used to be the thing. It's like when people go...
Or Conan, the Barbarian magazine. There's boobies in it.
It's like it's adult. And it's adult. It's boobs.
That's about it. Yeah, that's what made it a different book. It's for adults. Why? Because there's a naked lady in it. Oh, okay then.
They still said gosh.
They said, yeah. It was basically the regular Conan book you'd buy every month.
With
except
boobs.
There'd be a couple of panels with some boobs. Yeah. We weren't stupid. We knew what was going on. And it was in black and white. So you knew it had to be adult. What did I buy? I picked up Terry Dodson's Adventure Man.
It came out yesterday.
Yeah, it came out number two.
That's a fun book.
Which is, I didn't realize there were series. I picked up the trade.
Yeah, the first one was 6 issues or something.
Yeah, but they had volume one and volume two. Like
in
New York. It's like an old type of...
It's like Doc Savage.
Doc Savage.
Next Generation.
Like a Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
So I got that yesterday.
Tom Strong.
Oh, you did that.
Yeah. It's good. It's a fun book.
I did that. I saw that the DC... I don't know why they're doing this. They took World's Finest by Mark Waid and Dan Mora,
yeah,
and they only put 5 issues together, but they put it in a hardcover for like $25. I'm like, wow. Why can't you just put it in a paperback trade? Yeah. You
know, well, they collected the JSA in hardcover.
I saw that. Yeah. They also reprinted Mark Waid's The Kingdom last week, where you got artwork of that
omnibus,
too. As an omnibus. Yeah. Well, it wasn't that big.
Well, it was.
I was thinking omnibus. It's got to be like 300 or 400
pages.
Yeah,
no, there were. I forget how many issues were connected to that, but it was like 12. There was like a 1 month thing that DC did.
Yeah.
Or was it more? Because I think Zek worked on like
zero-hour omnibus,
a mini series one.
Did that come out?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I got a copy of it.
Did you get one?
Yeah.
I think it's out.
And you know why they're doing that?
Because they want to make money.
There's a video game that Sony has that's called Zero Hour.
Oh, really?
And Sony's been trying to trademark their game.
You've got
to
be kidding.
And DC, since Zero Hour was this one-time event, I guess they've been fighting in for trademark court or something.
That's why they put it out? I thought it was a
30th anniversary. DC is doing, like, they put out a new edition every year to kind of qualify as, no, it's a series.
Oh, come on.
Really?
Wow.
That's what
I didn't know that.
But I mean,
I wonder why. I thought it was for the 30th anniversary. That's
well,
why
it was. And but they didn't. Did you notice Shazam had a 30th anniversary? Power Shazam.
Oh.
The graphic novel came out in early.
But it's been out of print for years.
February of 1994.
So why did that come out?
Because
they want to.
Nobody cares.
Come on. Why with the movies? And, well, they're going to talk about those movies.
No, but I mean, I'm saying, like, they don't...
Wow.
They don't
Marvel would.
Care
Marvel
about
Marvel puts out everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, Marvel's actually doing the burn... The stuff I inked of Burns is now showing up in the Masterworks.
Yeah.
And the next couple Fantastic Four Masterworks, I think the couple issues that I drew, that I penciled after Burn left, are part of that, too.
Oh, yeah. I did not know
And
that.
DC just gave up on their reprints. They
do,
just
basically.
They don't
yeah.
have any continuous run...
No.
Books. They could have done
that. Those big omnibus like the No, I bought one. Phantom Stranger. I bought
I'm
that.
I'm saying they don't have very obscure. Series. In other words, they don't print anything in order.
No, there's no Marvel. Marvel Masters just started doing it in reprints.
DC had the archives. They could have done it.
Yeah, no.
But, you know.
Don't know
there's
why.
There's probably like 8-9 volumes of Golden Age Superman.
Yeah.
But there's not 8 or 9 volumes of Silver Age.
Nope.
You know, it's weird. They don't have the same dedication to that.
I don't know. I think they're missing an audience. I don't know how big it would be, but there'd be somebody out there.
Well, people were complaining. I saw online there was some Thor volume of the Al Ewing Thor.
Okay.
And they were saying like it's the
missing
first
stuff.
6 issues, but it's like $30 hardcover or something. And they're like, I'm not buying that. But it's like, how much did you pay individually?
Oh, I know.
You know, each issue
you know
is
what
now
amazes
$4,
me about
bucks,
them?
Right? Or is it $4.99?
Marvel puts out these things. They're called Epic, and they're paperbacks.
Oh, yeah.
But they have... I just picked up a Luke Cage Volume 3.
Are those the ones that are
the shorter
size?
No, those are the even smaller ones. But these are more like comic book size. But they have like 400, 500 pages for $39.
Yeah.
It's a good... And it's in color.
Yeah.
It's a good deal if you want to just read it and something... The only problem with Omnibus, I told you, there's the hardcover, it's so heavy, it's a bitch to hold that up there.
The problem with Omnibus is that once you get in the middle, you're losing
the
art in the,
the gutter.
Gutter
loss, Well, what else is going on that I can bitch about? By the way, Charlie Cox will be at Trificon on August 18th. He's just not on the website till June 16th. So if you think you're having a Mandela effect, you are not. He was advertised for a week. But due to a
press blackout,
I had to take him down until June 16th,
at
which time he will be back on the website, and pre-orders for his photo ops and his autographs will once again resume. Yeah. So join us 3 months from now, and if you weren't crazy, Charlie Cox will be a Trificon.
So
I just can't put it up until June 16th.
You have the now Trificon shirt. Looks
I have
really
the
cool.
new one. It's here it comes. Trificon, dedicated to the 60th anniversary of
Daredevil. And there's my hand lettering.
And that's right, because there was no font that looked like this.
Plus, yeah, you
and I had to change it to red and yellow because you put a gradation in the artwork there, and I couldn't do a gradation because it would come out like mud.
Well, but your shirt is
And I only have
limited.
So many colors.
It's good,
red
it looks,
and yellow.
It works good on black.
There it goes.
So here's a question for you.
Yes.
When you're not even a... You have the gamer show coming
I haven't. 3 weeks,
yeah.
Can't you tell? Don't I look nervous about it?
I was going to say, you're not really drinking
billboards.
Too much.
No. There's billboards on the highway.
Yeah.
I'm putting ads on social media. I actually
So you have a couple of guests. Don't you also have a couple of interesting guests for that?
I do, Jerry. It's good that
I'm
you
not
mentioned
trying to
that.
Promote this, but
no,
I feel like
I have.
You
not only do I have voice actors, Ned Luke from Grand Theft Auto, but I do have David Hayter.
Oh,
the reason why I'm talking about
X-Men
David Hayter
script,
he's right. The X-Men screenwriter.
Did he do Watchmen, too?
He did Watchmen as well. It's not on there, Jerry. That's the other one.
Okay.
No, but David Hayter will be at the show, along with other voice actors from anime and video games and all that stuff. It's a different crowd, Jerry. It's a different crowd. But I'm actually doing his panel. Because I want to just talk to him about what it's like.
Cool.
As much as his fame
is he local?
No, he's in California.
Oh.
As much as his fame is from being in his solid Metal Gear or Metal Gear Solid.
Right.
You can tell I'm a big fan. Big fan, Jerry.
Right.
I want to know what it's like to write X-Men 1 and 2 and the Watchmen movie. Especially the Watchmen.
Yeah.
How is that going to be? I mean, how do you take that Alan Moore script, going in knowing Alan Moore hates you already, and try to come up with, what's the guy's name?
You clearly divorce yourself from
Zack Snyder and how to do that.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good adaptation. I really enjoyed it.
It's not as... That's one of those cases
but I want to know what happened to the
four-hour version or the longer version is a little bit too much to watch.
I tried watching that because there's one that has that animated Black Pirate thing going on in there,
too. But they did, like, the extended version.
Yeah.
And the extended version's a little too much.
Too much.
I don't need every panel of the comic
But what about
here.
The squid? I wanted to ask, why did they get rid of the squid? That was the big change.
It's weird.
It's
weird. I think they felt like at the time, didn't you read about that? I thought they said that they thought it was too big of a science fiction element.
Yeah.
But they did use it to a good effect in the movie.
They did.
I mean, in the
TV,
series.
So I'm going to ask Hayter what he thinks about that.
Yeah. I think they did.
Wasn't Jonathan Majors on the TV series?
No.
It was the guy
who played on Aquaman, the Black
Manta. Oh, the guy that was Black Manta. No, he was on the... What was that guy's
Lovecraft
name?
Country.
Lovecraft Country. That's one.
Yeah.
But they were almost on at the same time.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, both of them on HBO.
Yeah. Like, I thought he was on that.
Lovecraft Country was a really good show.
That was a good show.
And they didn't renew it for weird reasons.
Oh, really? Was it budget cuts or something like that?
No, it was weird because it was very popular, obviously. It made, they got nominations
off
of it.
Yeah, he was good
in
that.
And the creator went in to talk about second season ideas, and they were like, we're not going to go forward with it.
Oh, I didn't know that. I just saw something else
the
other day.
Some of it had to do with the fact that the actors all got really good gigs after that.
Oh, okay.
So they might not have been available, or they might have wanted more money.
I just saw something else the other day. They said such and such is not getting a second season.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't think it was.
They've been dumping a lot.
Oh, Shogun, which I haven't watched because I watched the original Richard Chamberlain one with
People are liking it.
It's huge. My son's like, Dad, did you watch Shogun?
Yeah.
I go, I saw it 40 years ago. Now I know how my dad felt when I go, Dad, did you see King Kong?
Right.
With Jeff Bridges and Jessica Lange? No, I saw it 50 years ago.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, Shogun, is Sala in it? Because he was in the original one, John Rhys Davies. And then there was a sequel called Noble House. Remember James Clavell?
Yeah.
James Clavell actually wrote Bridge on the River Kwai.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did know that.
I did not know that. Years later, I was like, wait, what? And the music guy for Bridge on the River Kwai was also the music guy for... Is it Vangelis? No.
He was on Bridge on the River Kwai.
Whoever did
like
the music
guys. That wasn't Goldsmith? Jerry Goldsmith?
Was it Jerry Goldsmith? One of these guys that when you go look back, you're like, wait, that's the same guy?
Yeah.
Wasn't Jerry Goldsmith Dr. Zhivago?
Goldsmith did Star Trek motion picture.
Yeah, but my mother had the Dr. Zhivago soundtrack when I was a kid. I had to hear that. Just like Titanic was for other people, my mom's was Dr. Zhivago. So, Laura's theme.
I can look when I get home because I do have the LP of Bridge on the River Kwai soundtrack. I bought.
That's where they do the whistle thing? That was my favorite.
Yeah. And you can see Steven Spielberg's version was the young Christian Bale.
Empire of the Sun.
Yeah.
You know what? I just want. I'm still watching my Northern Exposure. I'm doing that. I'm going to tell you, I never thought much about it until now when I'm working with Corbin Burnson. Not Corbin Burnson.
No, you're thinking of the guy who.
That's the guy
who
from LA Law.
The guy who's the DJ?
No. That's John Corbin. The fellow that plays. Oh, Maurice Minifield.
The Barry Corbin?
Barry Corbin.
Yeah.
You know, when I watched that show years ago, I was just infatuated with Jeanine Turner. I still am.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeanine Turner. But watching this show now, I'm watching it almost every day, and you can see the character development. And that show goes off the rails because Rob Morrow decided he wanted to be a big superstar and leave the show. And it's unfortunate because there are actually is character arcs and people are changing over the show.
But they're tied to him.
But they're all tied
to him.
Once he leaves, he's the center point, and they're, the tent comes falling down because there's no thing. But what was his name again? Barry Corbin.
Yeah.
His character starts off as this homophobic, bigoted character. Right. But along the way, there's these moments where he suddenly shifts. And last night, he had a great interaction. His son, he finds out he was in the Korean War. He has a son who's Korean. And he wants to get married to this girl who's the daughter of the North Korean guy they fought against, who was like the commandant. And he couldn't believe it. But at the end, he saw how happy his son was.
Right.
So even though the daughter of his enemy, he let it go. Right. And he gave them his permission to marry.
Right.
And then the two Marine guys that are in town that he hates that are gay, and he always makes fun of.
Right.
They came up to him at the end and the roles were reversed. They go, you call yourself a Marine. I can't believe you let your son go with the enemy. What kind of Marine are you?
Right.
And they walk away and he's sitting there at the bar and he tells Holling, the barkeeper, his old friend, he says, you know, things used to be cut and dry when I was growing up. Things were right and wrong, black and white. But now I'm at an age when I suddenly see that there's a lot of gray in the world.
Right.
And then I'm like, you don't really get on situated comedies and stories any character development, because that's the whole idea with those shows.
Right.
You can't change. It's like a comic book.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to change.
You want the illusion of change.
Yeah, episodic TV. Yeah. You want to pay, you know, I watch episode 2, I watch episode 30.
Right.
They're the same story, the same people. Yeah. You can't
that show was good because it did do stuff with the characters.
It, which is not heard of back in the early 90s because we were still in that week-to-week TV show thing. And slowly they were doing it. And then what happens? Morrow leaves. The producers leave the show.
Right.
David Chase comes in.
Right.
And then I was thinking about David Chase because after that he goes on to write The Sopranos.
Right.
And does that, I go, you know, now that I'm watching The Sopranos, I go, there's a lot of Northern characters.
Yeah.
Ed, the guy that wants to be a filmmaker, well, that's Christopher.
Yeah.
And the other guy...
But that was built in early into the show.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's elements there that I'm like, hey, you know, he kind of lifted a little bit from this and that, you know?
But
and
I mean,
I'm thinking of Frank Burns.
The best shows were like that, though.
Frank Burns, he left the show, Larry Linville. Now I'm on a mash streak.
Right.
They said the reason why he left is there was nowhere else for his character to go. He was the butt of the jokes, and once Loretta Swit got married, Hot Lips Houlihan... There was nothing for Frank Burns to do except be the goof, and they got rid of him. But I said, imagine if his character changed to become more likable towards him. But that would have never happened.
But didn't the show shift a little bit more Alan Alda?
Very Alan Alda, because Gene Reynolds left.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so,
he
I mean,
moved
Alan
up,
was like the.
And a lot of his beliefs came out of the show as Hawkeye wasn't a womanizer.
Right.
He stopped drinking.
Right.
You're like, wait, that's not the
character. But that's character growth.
It is character growth, but...
I just do see, like, if you're, if you're in an ensemble, if one guy is suddenly sucking up all the screen time, then you have less time for the other actors.
And that's why Wayne Rogers left, because he was like, hey, it used to be a two-man show, now it's the Alan Alda show.
Yeah.
But thinking of that, Jerry, and somebody who's written Superman, I'm seeing I'm bringing it all back.
Yes.
How does one do that? Because I'm going to do a panel on the 60th anniversary of Daredevil at the show, because I have Charles Soule... Jason Aaron. Who else worked on Daredevil here? A couple of the other writers. I was going to have them do a panel.
Don't you have the artist who's doing it now?
I have the artist, but more so the writer, because you tell
artists
me.
Artists have opinions. Artists. They're working.
Do they have opinions?
Why not?
What do you do when you know, here? I remember Chaykin told me, he said, look, you're hired to write a licensed character, because he did some Indiana Jones and Star Wars. He says, they give you the toys to play with. They go, do whatever you want with them.
Yeah.
But when you're done with those toys, you got to put them right back in the box where you found them.
Right.
And they have to look like they did.
Right.
You can't do anything major. You can't take someone's arm off. You can't make, you know, so-and-so fall in love.
Yeah.
You can't kill a character off. So when you do Superman, do they ever give you any leeway? They said this is never going to, like...
They
the
never,
only characters you could kill are like what Jerry White, Barry White's son.
But we never got editorial interference or DC.
But wasn't
saying,
that the overall direction though from DC corporate? Like when they killed Robin, Starlin said he gets fired because they were like, "Who the hell fired Robin? We're selling toys and T-shirts to this guy." And then Danny O'Neill threw Starlin under the bus and said, "Well, Starlin did it." They go, "Well, fire that guy," and he got rid
they
of
didn't. It wasn't like a thing where DC was looking over our shoulders. They were happy that we wanted to do the books and that we had the sensibility to do it.
But is there a standing order that you do realize you're never going to kill Lois Lane. You're never going to kill Mom Pa Kent.
They killed Superman.
But they brought him back. Yeah,
I'm
I know.
Just saying, like,
but that was a stunt book. Come on.
No, but I mean, it was real. But I'm saying,
I like, actually thought it was.
They, but the fact that they let us do it,
yeah,
and they let us do it for an extended period, they had to sign off on that.
I got to admit, when I was a kid, for
their
a while,
first thought, their
I
first
wasn't a kid. I was about 27. Yeah, I thought you guys really did do it.
But the first thing they said to us is like, "Oh, you know, they're developing
a TV
the
show.
The TV show, and you know, Warner Brothers is going to look. It's like you got to bring it back.
Well, what
it's
about like, Batman? Well, there was no back. Batman stuff. They broke his back. Did yeah. you know anything was going yeah. behind the scenes with that?
We knew that was happening.
Yeah,
because we knew there.
But
that
was there talk that there might be a new Azrael would be the new? There would be no more Bruce Wayne, or was
we
that never
we
really
part of their?
What
group?
About?
When but they, when we. When we suggested the death of Superman, yeah. they said, oh, we can't do that because we're going to have this big event with Batman. It's like, why can't you do both
well,
of them?
You did. No, and they agree. You didn't know. There's something you would know. Barry Allen's wiped out.
Yeah.
Was there talk of he would never really ever come back?
He was not supposed to ever come back.
Ever come back.
Yeah.
Supergirl Crisis, dies.
Everything in Crisis
you said
was supposed to be
through.
Fixed. No Supergirl.
So Wally Wood was supposed to be the new Flash.
It would undermine
it's
their
the story.
Deaths.
Yeah.
Right.
Like when the Emperor comes back in the last Star Wars movie, it's like, well, that ruins number three now.
But see, here's the thing. Like when we were doing Superman, that's why we had our Supergirl was the last survivor of her world.
Yeah.
But she wasn't Kara,
no,
you know.
No.
I mean, there was a point to all that. We were trying to
make your own new stories.
We were trying to honor the agreement with Crisis.
Right.
And then what is Jeff Loeb does, it's like a different DC management. Jeff
yeah.
Loeb goes, oh no, it's going to be Kara Zor-El.
Yeah.
And she's back and, you know, screw you
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, because Peter David made that Alien one that was like
well,
an adapted.
We did. That was
you,
ours.
You guys.
Yeah.
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 But
so,
he
I mean,
made the Supergirl book based on that character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Matrix.
Matrix.
She
that's
came
right.
back
that's
from
right.
the pocket universe.
Yes. Yeah. yeah.
And yeah,
but
no,
Superboy never came back. The original Superboy, he's still out there with Krypto in that little pocket world, isn't he?
Well, that Superboy is, he became the Superboy Prime.
Oh, that's right.
From Crisis.
So everybody came back. Eventually, so it was yeah. a waste of time yeah. because...
It's not a waste of time. It lasted for 20 years, at least, right? So 85
to
till
2004.
They brought, yeah, so 95, 2000, whenever they brought Supergirl back, and then Jeff
yeah.
Johns brought Flashback, it was almost... 10,
well, how about
years.
Hal Jordan? I thought that was permanent.
Yeah.
I thought he was really
well,
going to be
well, that was
Kyle.
Pretty much like, how do you, where do you go from here?
Why?
They not only, well, he
with
became.
Kyle Reed, oh, they wiped out all the Guardians.
He became Parallax, and then.
Wiped out the Corps.
He was gone, and
yeah.
then he became the Spectre.
Yeah, which I thought was
yeah.
great. I like
yeah.
that idea.
But I mean, I'm saying, like, the problem with anything is people change. After however many years, different people are running DC, and it's like,
yeah,
we think this is a good idea. You can't say no. That's their decision, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
And if fans like it, then that's fine too, because they're there to tell comics.
So there's well, the old Blue Beetle never came back.
Yeah,
not Ted Kord. I'm talking about the one
They've
before.
Used him.
What's his name? I can't think of it.
The fifth, the '40s guy.
Yeah,
they've shown him in there. Dan Garrett.
Dan Garrett, but he's
yeah.
not come back. Come back.
I think they did bring
well,
him.
Well, Jay Garrett came back.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm saying, like, nothing is final.
Nothing's permanent. I guess the next story.
But that's part of the...
Uncle Ben never came back.
Someone could come up with some idea. Like, when I was... Here's a good one.
Actually, Uncle Ben did come back in the Ultimate Universe.
When Juergens was working on Captain America...
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, he was doing Thor, and he took over Captain America.
So, you didn't want to put him in that suit thing? Remember he lost his... And Iron Man made him a suit?
I don't remember. I just... Dan did a good run on Captain America.
He did. He, yeah.
But Dan, at the time, and I'm going from memory, Dan pitched... The
Sam
Marvel,
Wilson?
No, he pitched the idea of having a storyline where Bucky comes back.
Oh, he
and
did.
And they were like, "Nope, this is never going to happen. He's not going to."
Oh no,
that's
shit.
One of those things you can't
yeah,
violate
no,
that.
Yeah, no
Bucky's
Uncle Ben
dead.
And no Gwen Stacy.
And then they wound up doing
Brubaker,
it. They did a great,
yeah.
great job with it, but that just shows you that it depends
it
on
depends
who's,
in, who's
charge. In
charge. Yeah,
and whether somebody thought. This idea was better than that idea, whatever.
No, 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 because I just said that new Ultimate Spider-Man came out and Uncle Ben's alive, but
yeah.
it's an alternate universe. And same thing with when they brought him back in that Bendis book years ago.
Yeah.
With Bagley. Uncle Ben was part of it for a while. He was more of a hippie Uncle Ben with a ponytail.
And they did this in, I don't know if you didn't read much Superman, did you? In
yeah.
the 60s, Superman?
Oh, the 60s, no.
70s.
They were all the same book.
I remember.
In the 70s, I did. When
I
he worked at
like,
GBS.
I wasn't a big fan of that stuff.
Yeah. Steve Lombard was
But I remember Al Vey, in the studio when we were working together, like maybe 84, 85.
Yeah.
I remember telling him that. I was like, because I was going to take over Superman. Maybe it was after I'd started Superman. But he was like, he said, oh, you know, there's this one story they did that you've got to read. And he, I feel like he actually loaned me his copy.
What was it?
It was a story where through some weird, maybe some alien overlord or something, Pa Kent gets one day back on Earth.
Oh, I remember that.
And it's a great story.
It is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but it kind of violates that, oh, Pa Kent is dead. But it was like, oh, this is a one-time thing. He's got 24 hours.
And then they bring him back with Burn. Yeah.
But the Burn thing is a reboot.
Yeah.
And the parents being part of that were so important to it.
Yeah,
because
the
idea is Superman was perceived as being a 50-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Even though he wasn't supposed to be as a 50-year-old guy, how do you make someone younger have their parents around
him? Right.
That's the perfect way to project that he's young, because he's still seeing his parents
and
they're advising him and helping him. And,
that's clever.
But it was also like a great story element for us, because we were all at the age where we had our parents alive.
You
know, you appreciate the fact that I had a bad day.
Yeah,
Lex Luthor beat me.
Yeah.
You know, who are you going to go to? Your parents are going to go, no, tomorrow you'll make that right. You know?
Yeah.
That's storytelling.
That's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could do any of those things in a cheap way or a throwaway way, and that's probably why we're not going to
bring
back.
So people shouldn't
Barry
be
getting
so pissed when they go to the store and they see the books being redone for the 1,000th time. It has been watered down so much that it's like, there's no significance.
There
if
should
I
be
see
a
the
moratorium.
Joker comes back.
There should be a moratorium that a book has to run at least 50 issues
or
more before they reboot.
When
it.
You make their ultimate villain come back, maybe once every 5 years.
Yeah.
Maybe Doctor Doom comes back once in a blue moon.
Yeah.
Joker comes back once every couple years. Not like
those are like
every
TV
month.
To me, those feel like TV concepts that like Lex Luthor has to be all around.
Oh my god, every issue.
Like when we did the Superman stuff, Lex Luthor wasn't the villain in every story.
No, you guys had different
villains.
He was
in the background.
Yeah.
We'd set up, you know, Byrne had come up with, or Marv, or whoever had come up with the idea of him being the evil businessman.
Yeah.
But it was good because he could be there,
but
he wasn't integral to what was happening.
Yeah.
It just that, there's this Donald Trump guy in the background.
Yeah. That's what's just so frustrating with this new stuff. It's like, oh my God, every time I walk in the store, I go, the Joker's on the cover. Oh, Catwoman's got her own book now. Oh, Harley Quinn's in a book.
See, I don't mind that, but again, the key is always, like, if you have a character, like with Superman,
it's
the same with Spider-Man, I think, too, is that you need a supporting cast that can take the heat off of the main guy because he's in four books a month or whatever.
Yeah.
You're burning through the
Spectacular
character.
Spider-Man was good because it was all about the side characters for a while.
You changed
and then they
the focus.
Yeah, and then they lost that.
And that's what we've done on Superman.
Marvel team-up was just those one-off stories where you bumped into somebody crossing town and they have
like
an adventure.
Like when I was doing Adventures, Superman, and it was Superman and the Suicide Slum.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, Daily Planet, but also that with the other book.
The main Superman book
was Smallville. And,
no, they needed to do that more. I think that's where they lost focus now. Now it's like every book's an event.
Well, because when you're reading something, even if you like a character, it tests your ability to like something if you have five books of that character and each guy's telling virtually the same
type of
story.
Yeah.
So, and that's why people, when they do talk about the Superman stuff, they talk about how much they like the side characters, Bibbo.
I just picked up Jason Aaron's Action Comics yesterday.
Yeah.
Haven't read it yet.
Did you read the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the guy with his big story with Bizarro.
Yeah, it was. And then Philip Kennedy Johnson had a good run on it. And then Juergens was on it.
Yeah.
And Tomasi was on it? Tomasi
was on it. Yeah, he did that.
He and Dan
were doing the Action in Superman at the time. Yeah,
and then there was that whole run they did where Jor-El came back.
Yeah,
remember that?
It was the Jeff Johns
a couple
one.
Years ago. Yeah. Some good stories, but again, it's like, I feel bad. I wish they would limit the amount of books. There's still no word who's going to buy Warner Brothers now. Is it still out there?
No, Warner. The rumor last I heard was that Warner was going to merge with Paramount.
Oh,
but then Warner's stock tanked, as did Paramount's.
So who? So it's
so
up
the
for
deal
grabs.
Was off.
Who's
yeah.
Apple going to buy?
Yeah. So now what? This crazy thing was, Apple's
was
always sitting off in the back.
Yeah.
That Apple's still interested in buying a major studio, so
Apple
could buy Paramount.
I thought they bought United Artists. Do they own James Bond?
No, that's Amazon.
Oh, Amazon.
Yeah, they bought MGM. And they
Oh, yeah. So why doesn't Apple buy it? You think they would. But then they got to run a movie studio. They'll probably be hands off.
Honestly, I think these are all things above our pay grade, but yeah. I think they're waiting for the stock price to get depressed enough
to just sweep it up.
They could have bought it when it was high, but why would you buy it when it's high? You let the company shoot themselves.
I was talking about that somebody today. We were talking about how all these small businesses went away over the years. I said, basically, how the small business went away, but yet the Amazons and the rest of the world's got bigger.
Yeah.
It's almost like a concerted effort. It's like, well, we're wiping out all your small shops. Just Amazon, like Home Depot wiped out all the hardware
stores. But Amazon started with the idea that they were undercutting everybody's price,
yeah.
and they were floated by stock. So a lot, whoever had that stock yeah. basically had to defer getting any kind of return on the stock until Amazon killed all the competition yeah. and owned the market. That was their ultimate goal.
We're selling
these things at a loss to get yeah. you to buy and then slowly raise the price when all the stores go out. You know, you'd think that would be illegal, but it's not.
No, but I remember they were just starting off selling books, and everybody was like this, and I said, well, if they could ever sell food, no, they'll never. If they could ever sell prescriptions, no, they'll never. And then sure enough, everything that
they're starting doctor services.
Are they really?
Yeah.
I know. Did I tell you they sell real estate, too? Did I tell you that?
Yeah. But I mean, the eBay does, too. So eBay's in there, all those things.
When eBay started selling cars online, yeah, I was like, what's happening here?
But I mean, with Apple, with Amazon, the fact that you go on there, they started with their... it's like you could get a, what do they call it? Like a remote or a Zoom meeting with a yeah. medical professional.
Yeah.
That's one step away from them being Amazon doctors. Wow. You know? Yeah. And it makes sense because they could use a network
of people, doctors
who, you know, what is the guy in The Simpsons, Dr. Nick.
Dr. Nick,
you know,
yeah.
he's got no patients, so hey, I'm going to give
everybody,
these.
I'll be on Zoom calls today. Yeah. All right, hey. I guess you don't have to leave your house. You get the same advice. Hey, look, I cut my finger. Oh, hold it up to the camera. Oh,
hold your finger to the phone. Yep, I think that needs three stitches. We'll make an appointment for you to go to the
Need this medication? Let me press a button. Bing, it's in your cart.
Right.
Bing, it'll be at your house.
Would you like it delivered today?
That's creepy.
You saw that, like, which one of it is, I think both Walgreens, but definitely CVS.
Yeah.
CVS bought a big healthcare provider. Network.
So when you go to the doctor, so it goes right to you.
Yeah, they got their. It's like everybody's going to be a brand name.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, did you notice all the hospitals disappeared? They all have Hartford Health. Where we live, it's Hartford Healthcare.
And New Haven.
But it used to be St. Vincent's. That's gone. It's like one logo on everything.
Hartford
like,
Healthcare is everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Almost all of the walk-ins are Hartford.
Well, the name of that amphitheater now is the Hartford Healthcare Theater. Yeah. It's like you guys own everything.
Yeah. It's a little nuts.
Like Yale, New Haven used to own everything, but they're all.
I mean, we're at a point where we need Teddy Roosevelt
to break up the big companies. To break it up, well,
because there's no. The problem is there's no competition.
No, there isn't.
There's only when like even.
We're continuing on. No, that you just yeah. 1 minute, whatever you said, Apple heard you.
So which one is it though?
No, that's the one we just talked about. Okay. Colin Grill 120. This is a brand new one, so I'm going to have to edit those together. This is when we went to the movies last week.
Yeah.
But whatever Jerry said, Apple was listening, and they turned off the podcast.
Yeah, maybe I was getting too close.
You were. The Matrix found out. I was talking against it. It turned itself off. You were like, they want to make this movie, and then Apple's going to come in. Apple's like, no, Jerry. Also, there's two guys standing there. Mr. Ordway. Yeah, we need to see you right now. You've figured it out. He's figured out the thing. But I've never had that happen before. Yeah. I was just trying to know what time it was.
It is weird, though. Huh. But the point I was making was...
Go ahead. That's Jerry's point. I have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, with less studios
and
more companies, or smaller, you know, less companies owning more properties, that you're really not counter-programming.
No.
You know, like this summer, having Oppenheimer and Barbie open, those were
crazy.
Clearly counter-programmed, but it was successful because they had... pretty much a different audience.
Yeah.
As opposed to Oppenheimer versus a movie about
Einstein
or something.
Yeah, it was weird how Barbenheimer worked. I was like, huh?
But I mean, it was brilliant, whoever came up with the idea.
Yeah.
I think it was the Oppenheimer people who were like, oh, shoot, Barbie's going
to
be big.
Yes. They opened the same day.
But I mean, that's the key to me is that I think if you have, again, you know, Avatar rather than another DC movie or a Marvel movie or whatever.
Yeah.
You're programming against a superhero film or your program, whatever the biggest thing is.
Well, Ghostbusters next week, maybe they'll do Ghost Godzilla. You gotta see them all. It's working. I don't know, just the screen went dark. Like, now what?
They're onto something.
I don't know. Yeah. That's it. I got nothing.
They're stealing your ideas. Somebody inside your phone is writing down. Wait,
it's the people that got mad at me about the indie comic thing. They was like, "Oh,
Ghost Godzilla, it's big. It'll be big."
The Ghost of King Kong.
Yeah.
Why not? Why not? They've done everything.
Oh, so the other movie that's coming in is the
what?
The Planet of the Apes.
Oh, that's on Memorial Day.
Yeah.
This one looks more like the original show, but
is this a reboot?
Or
do we know? Is it like a continuation?
No, it's a continuation of the last one.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Oh, okay.
But the problem is, they looked at the CGI grapes. The great, great ape. And I tell you, I would take Roddy McDowell over his rubber face and the nightgown outfit.
People have body language.
Yeah.
They have body
CGI
language.
CGI things, it looks real, but I don't care.
Well, maybe other people don't do it, but I look at stuff like that and I go, is that all CGI? Or do they,
I was amazed.
Did they just replace someone's head or
something? No, Paul Giamatti's like, whenever you see a gorilla in a movie, that is not a real gorilla, because they can't film real gorillas because they're not going to hit their mark and read their cues. They'll rip your face off.
Right, right.
You know, like that lady at times.
But then they're, like in that The Greatest Showman, which was about P.T. Barnum.
Yes.
They had circus animals, and they were all CG.
They were all CG.
And it's like, well, at some point, you could have an animal in a cage. Why can't that be a real lion?
No, they wouldn't do that anymore.
Because
it's cruel.
It doesn't look the same as the CG one.
No.
You'd be going, oh, wait, what?
That's what they said when they did. What movie did they just redo? The Lion King. And they said the reason why it didn't work too well is because they were so realistic with the animals. They're not as expressive as a cartoon. So, you know, Mufasa has those big eyes or whatever.
Right.
And Simba, but when you do a real lion, they don't look like that. They're not like, oh, look at my face. Oh, I'm going to sing like whatever.
But there's, there's a big thing about animation, especially cartoony or animation, is that you stretch and
exaggerate.
Like,
it's
almost like a ball that goes from round to elongated.
Yeah.
Right. It's because that's part of what makes those characters feel like they're moving.
Yeah, if you do it as a realistic thing.
If you're trying to do something realistic, it's that motion capture thing, which is slightly lifeless.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
Yeah,
even
it
as
is.
Good
it's
as it is,
yeah.
it's still lifeless.
It is.
Know?
Speaking of lifeless, there's Claire. Oh, look at that look. We're trying to wrap this up. I got nothing. Oh, it's St. Patty's Day. This place will be rocking on Sunday, right?
Yeah, well.
Oh, yeah. Is the parade going to happen in Fairfield? Are they just going to end it right here?
Yeah, right. They just march.
Years ago in New Haven, they would end it at Malone.
As they walk by.
Well, here we have bagpipes and Irish step dancers.
Yeah.
That's what, on Sunday?
That's the real parade, yeah.
Yeah, you have to work.
We're running out of Guinness
glasses.
You have to work that day?
Yeah, in the morning.
Oh, you got to clean up. Oh.
You have earplugs?
I remember being on Chaz and AJ at 6 in the morning with green body paint on as the Hulk when they were doing it in Norwalk at O'Neill's Pub in Norwalk. That's where the Chaz and AJ one would be, and I would show up in the morning and go in the bathroom and put all green paint on and come out and be the Hulk. But I forgot I had it on and I had to go to Stu Leonard's after that.
That's funny.
So at least I put a shirt on.
Yeah.
But I had green face on and people were just like, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day. And I was like, oh, shit. I had green makeup.
Dude,
on.
You look sick.
You look sick. Are you all right? And the funny thing, there's a drunk guy in the bathroom and I walk in and I'm all green and he just looks right over at me and goes, hey, whiskey for the leprechaun. And I was like, okay, I'm not a leprechaun. I am the Incredible Hulk, okay? Get it straight, sir. You drunken lush.
I eat leprechauns for dinner.
Oh, I have stories. Back in the day, back in the 80s, we'd go to the New Haven St. Patrick's Day Parade, and it would end at Malone's on State Street. Malone's was an Irish pub. Go figure. And the bagpipers would be walking around. The cops would be there. The firemen would be there. Everybody, all underage people would be there. In fact, my wife was there.
Were there any fist fights?
Oh, there was plenty of fist fights. It was like the quiet man outside. And they would be peeing against the wall. And I remember I had to go to the bathroom. And there was a porta-johnny outside. So I was a little devilish back in the day. So I took one of the darts off the board and closed the latch on the lock of the porta-johnny and shoved the dart in there so the guy inside couldn't get out. And the thing started rocking back and forth, like, let me out, boom, 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 let me out. And everyone's laughing. And there's some sloshing going around because the pee and the poop sloshed around.
And he probably came out with blue feet.
He was a police officer. And when he came out,
he
was not happy. He came through that bar and they were like, who locked me in there? And they're like, that guy did. The future king of the nerds.
Yeah.
And he comes up to somebody, he comes up to me, he goes, hey, you. He puts me up against the wall. I go, yes, sir. He goes, next time you lock somebody in the bathroom, you better make sure he doesn't have one of these. And he looked his coat up, and he had a gun in his back, where his ass crack would be.
Yeah.
And my wife, who was then my girlfriend, goes, "Is that your throw gun?" And he goes, "What?" And she goes, "You know, your throw gun. When you kill somebody, you throw it on the scene and say that guy had a piece on him." And he's like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And I was like, don't piss him off.
You're making this worse.
And then some little kid came up, because it was like being in the seventh layer of Dante's Inferno.
Right.
This little kid comes up with a box of chocolate bars, because they sell chocolate bars for the church.
Right.
I was like, "Excuse me, sir, would you like to buy a candy bar for St. Aidan's?" And he's like, "What?" I'm like, "Why is there an underage 8-year-old in a bar with..."
He's got to pay his bar tab.
He's got to pay his bar tab. Yeah. "Come on, I got to get me a pack of smokes. Are you going to be buying the chocolate or not, you fuck?" So the guy let me go. But yeah, we would have plenty of time at the old bar at Malone's Pub in New Haven, which is no longer there anymore. It's been closed down years ago.
I remember going. I was in New York. It must have been a Friday.
I've done New York's parade too.
Yeah, and Mike Carlin and his wife at the time, Veronica.
Yes.
We were walking through and around the parade, and it was like so crazy to see how nuts
people were. Oh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah.
They were super nuts.
Oh, yeah. 1987, I was there for that parade on St. Patrick's
Day.
Were you?
That was probably the year.
It was out of control. It was down Fifth Avenue. It was so bad. We took off. We ended up in Chinatown. I don't even know how we got in Chinatown.
It would have been 88 because I think...
I moved
at the end of March.
That was the
beginning of March.
It was when it was still cold back in March, back before the...
I moved March 15th, I think. So
we were on the train back, and we had no money left. So somehow we got on the train back to New Haven. And back then you could smoke on the train cars.
Yeah.
Smoking was still a thing.
Right.
And this guy was drunk out of his mind, and he went to smoke a cigarette. And everyone's like, "Hey, buddy, stop smoking that cigarette." So you could open the windows back in the day. Do you remember you could open the windows on the Metro North and stuff?
That, yeah.
So the guy opened the train window, would have a top and a bottom, and he dropped the top, and he stood on the chair, and he was smoking a cigarette, and he put his head out the window to blow the smoke. And we're looking, me and my friend Carl, I go, "Isn't there another train coming soon?" He's like, "Yeah." "Oh, my God." So we leaned over and grabbed the guy.
Just as we
pulled him in, another train came whizzing by, like that close. It would have taken his head clean off, you know? So he's like, "Oh, you saved my life." I was like, "Oh, I owe you three wishes, fellas. What do you want now?" So he was so messed up. He goes, "Oh, where's the bathroom?" I said, "I don't know. I think it's over there." It wasn't the bathroom. It was the conductor's car. So he went in there, and my buddy's looking at him. He goes, "I don't think that's the bathroom." I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Yeah, I don't know. It's not the bathroom." So he comes out a couple minutes later and walks away, and then I see the conductor coming through afterwards, and they would go in that room and check on stuff, and all of a sudden he goes to the room, and he comes out and goes, "Who the hell took a shit in that goddamn conductor?" And we're all like, looking at the other, we're all like slowly pointing down the road to the drunken guy, and he's like, "That son of a bitch," and he went and grabbed him, he goes, "I got fucking..." The next stop was Stanford, threw him off the train, just left, "You can't throw me off, I gotta get to New Haven, fuck you," boom, threw him off. But, back in the day, that's when they went up to my friend. True story, and then I'll end this one. St. Patrick's Day, 1987. We're at the Third Precinct's favorite bar in Chinatown. And my friend Robert had long hair. Might have been 88 now that I think about it. Maybe it was 88.
Yeah.
So Rob had long hair. He was from Florida. So we were at this bar called Hennessy's.
Yeah.
Hennessy's Bar. And we were drinking Genesee. We were laughing about it because I think Genesee was a beer at the time.
Remember? Rochester, New York.
Yes, yes. So we were drinking Genesee's. So we go up. They had a jukebox. A jukebox. Remember they put coins in?
Yep.
So my buddies put the money in. Come on. And they're all doing that unicorn song.
The unicorn.
Yeah. And they're all dancing around like idiots. And I go, "You're freaking people, Italian people." We just laugh at the Irish on that day. We go, "Yeah, it's cute. What are you
doing?" McNamara's band.
Yeah.
We got that waiting.
Yeah. "Oh, come on, put a derby on Killing the Little People. Oh, it's the best movie ever."
Genesee, Genesee. Yeah, that was in there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So we're in there. So we're over there trying to pick a number. My friend's like, "I want to hear, is it Van Morrison? Is he Irish?"
Yeah.
One of my buddies trying to get Irish songs on the jukebox. So we come back to the table, and the girl that was serving us, she's like, "I'm an illegal, you know. I'm from Cork County. I don't have a green card to be here." And we're like, "Why are you telling us
all
this?
Will you marry me?"
Yeah, pretty much. "I need to get a green card to stay in the States. Which one of you boys want to be my husband?" So we come back, and the table is now surrounded by these big dudes with mustaches, and my friend Rob is in the corner. He's like, no, leave me alone. I won't do it. And I'm like, I can't get into the actual verbiage because I would be canceled, but he was saying some questionable things. And me and Carla go, hey, guys, what happened? We just walked away for a minute to go to the bathroom. Once he goes, your friend's got long hair. I said, yes, he does. They go, we don't like long hairs. I go, oh, what's that all about? Yeah. He goes, you know where you are? I said, New York. He said, you're in the third precinct, and God bless the folks at the third precinct in New York City. You're at the third precinct's favorite bar, so we don't like your buddy, and we're going to kick his ass. I go, why? He goes, because he's a... And words you don't say nowadays.
Right.
And I said, oh, no, that's not true, sir. He's, you know, a good guy. We're from New Haven. You're from New Haven? Yeah. All right. Well, you're all right. I said, my uncle's the police commissioner. My other uncle's a cop. All right. You're okay. You won't get beat up. What about your buddy there? My friend Carl's right there with a cigarette. He's like, I'm with this guy. Whatever. And they go, okay, but this guy, we're not letting him out. I said, all right, sir. You know, no problem. We're going to go settle up our tab, and we'll be on our way. So we go walk over to the bar, and we're paying the money. And then my friend Rob, for some stupid reason, goes, and I said, there's the exit.
Yeah.
We're feet away from the
Run
exit.
For it.
No. Rob gets up and goes, don't go too far, guys. I'm going to need backup when I kick these guys' asses. At that point, you hear all the chairs being slid across the floor as everybody got up and grabbed Rob and started pummeling the hell out of him, you know? And me and Carl just run out the door.
Yeah.
And Carl goes, what about Rob? I go, forget it. He's dead already. Just keep going. So in our stupor,
let him go.
We did. We went. It was dark out, and there was still snow on the ground. Because back then it used to snow in March.
Yeah.
And we're running, and he goes, where are we going? I don't know. Everything's in Chinese because we're in Chinatown. So we're like running, and he goes, let's go that way. Okay, well, I think we go that way. We ended up going in a complete circle.
Oh,
I had no idea where we were. And I go, hey, we can go to that bar. It looks okay. It was the same bar we had just come out of. So we go in there, and there's Rob in the corner getting beat up. And we walk back in, and the guys turn around and go, we want your back. You want more? And we're like, oh, no, we went the wrong place. And then we go, come on. And then Rob's like crawling out, and we're running, and the cops are chasing down the street. And do you ever see those Chinese restaurants that are downstairs? Like, you got to go downstairs, under, like, where they load the food, like, under the sidewalk.
Yeah.
So we saw stairs going down and a light. Come on, let's go in here. So we ran in there, and we, like, hid as the cops ran by us. And we turned around, and there's all these people in the Chinese restaurant eating, and all looking at us. And we're all like, and I go, what do you want? I said, oh, we don't have a table for some food. So we sit there. We have no money whatsoever. And for some reason, they had frogs in a tank.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a delicacy, but there was, like, a pet store. But there was frogs there.
Fresh frog legs.
And the guy's like, you want frogs? I'm like, no. So he goes, how much money you got? So we put, like, $2 down. I said, what can we get with that? He goes, egg roll. That's it. So he brought us, like, one egg roll, and we had to cut it up. Because if you don't eat, you have to get out. So we had to cut the egg roll up in three pieces. And we're sitting there eating and waiting and looking at the clock going, okay, it's time to go home. So we got out. Remember 42nd Street used to be a disaster?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's not like it now.
Right.
So we go to 42nd Street. We're headed to Grand Central. Everything is sex shops and live sex shows back in the day. So we walk into a bookstore, and my buddy Carl's like, what kind of books are these? And I'm like, and we saw a sign like, please hold books with both hands. We're like, what is that? Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had to go back, and we begged the conductor to let us on the train in New Haven because we had no money left. And they were, like, giving us a charity ticket because...
You didn't buy your return trip? What are you, dumb?
Well, there was no credit cards back then.
No, but you always buy a return trip.
Well, we were stupid.
You know how to get home.
I was a kid.
Then you could spend your money.
I was, like, 21 years old in New York on St. Patrick's Day, drunk out of my mind. Oh, the vomit was everywhere. Oh, that smelled so bad, that train, because all people...
You want to ruin
people's that's right.
Eating, yeah.
But people were just throwing up everywhere, going to the bathroom everywhere. And that's St. Patrick's
Day.
Those
are amateurs.
Back in 88. And I miss every day of it.
Yeah, I don't miss any of that.
You don't miss any of it?
No.
Oh, you used to have to. How was your mom's pub on those days?
She had steady old customers. So that
but that
was
Milwaukee.
Crazy.
That wasn't like a thing, right?
Well, there were Irish people there. It's just any excuse to drink, but she didn't do anything.
It's 2 o'clock. It's drinking time, boys. Yeah. Anyway.
It's the first of the month. Social security checks.
Yeah, is that true?
Drinks on me.
I thought it was the third of the month.
Well, one of them was the first, one of them was
the
third.
Social Security checks would come on the
third. I think pension checks were maybe the first or something.
Yeah, anyway, that's about it.
I remember we had a couple of good ones, but they mainly revolved around the use of green dye to make green beer.
Green dye, oh yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah. I remember green bagels. Remember
bagels? Well, we had our friend.
Says St. Patrick's Day like our green.
We were at our hangout, normal Friday hangout, and the guy was putting just like food coloring.
Yeah, food coloring.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We get it on your hands. Yeah,
we were getting it at a friend of ours. It's like, put extra in there. I was like,
oh no.
He's like, no, put more in there.
Turn your teeth green.
He drank his beer.
Oh yeah.
And his teeth, mouth was green, and he was hitting on girls and smiling, and it's like,
hey ladies, how are you? Oh, what do you got, scurvy? Yeah. So anyway, that was it.
You know I love scurvy.
You love scurvy. That's why he drinks the orange slices.
That's why I have the orange.
You know, I'm going to tell the missus this Sunday, why don't she and I come out to here to go say hello to Claire?
Yes.
I'll drink her down. She goes, I'm not going to go see your bar fly friends. Barfly. That was a Mickey Rourke movie.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
You never saw Barfly?
That's pretty great.
Oh, that was, you never heard of Mickey Rourke? He's Irish. You don't know who Mickey Rourke is? Are you serious? What's Mickey Rourke's famous movie? Well, 9½ weeks, maybe.
He was the wrestler.
He was the wrestler. You never saw the wrestler.
And he was in Iron Man 2.
Oh, yeah. Well, she probably saw Iron Man 2.
I'm going to just do cards because I don't know if I have cash.
Jesus, Orwell.
No, I don't. But I do have $10
but
on this.
But you might know
There's still $10
you still got that?
So that can be...
You saw Iron Man 2, right? He was Whiplash. That guy with the parrot.
Exactly.
That bird. That's not my bird. That guy. That guy.
I mean, I think...
The day I bring cash, you don't bring anything. Jesus, Lord.
Well, I mean, you know, I just...
Uncle Carl. Uncle Carl. You know what's so funny? Now that I remember, every year on St. Patrick's Day, we would get a new guy to go with us. It was a tradition. Carl and I would go, and we'd say, well, we need a third guy. So every year, we would pick a random stranger to hang out with us on St. Patrick's Day. And I... forgot all about that. So for about 6 years. Oh, we would go to Boston. If you look on YouTube, there's videos of us in Boston back in like 1990.
Why would you? Who was filming?
I don't. My friend Dennis filmed that one year, and you can see young Mitchie when I was skinny with dark hair, hanging down the streets of Boston with Carl. And Carl had that. I still have those big plastic horns, like. And he would go all. He said it was Bacchus, the god of wine and. Whatever. I don't know. It's all a dream. St. Patrick's Day. I forgot all about that. Now, if my kids do that, I'd be like, what are you, crazy? Why am I talking like that? Chief O'Hatter. Begorner. Begorner. What would he say to the commissioner?
So
Saints begorner.
I did a big cut and a skin flap.
Ooh, nice, Jerry.
Seal up.
The kids would be digging that. My son's in Arizona, actually. Spencer's in Arizona. Hanging out. No, on vacation. Owen's there. I'm headed to Italy.
Why is
in May for Milan, Italy.
Both kids are hanging together?
No. Owen's birthday, he's just hanging out in D.C. where he lives. And Spencer's out of New York City and hanging around in Arizona.
When are you going to?
All right, that's it. Have a happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
All right.
The Power Cosmic Podcast has been brought to you by Mitch Alec, producer of Terrific Con, Connecticut's Terrific Comic Con, happening every summer at the Mohegan Sun. For more information, go to terrificcon.com. And for more information about Jerry Ordway, go to your local comic book store, like Cave Comics in Newtown, Connecticut. And if you're looking for good pizza, check out Colony Grill Pizza, located in Stamford, Fairfield, Milford, and many other places, even Arlington, Virginia.